A husband, a father, and a police officer. I swore an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States, to protect the freedom of the people who pay my salary. I do not work for my governor, but for them. The governor elected to this beautiful state has ordered medical workers, teachers, and first responders to get the vaccine. I have personal and religious reasons as to why I will not take the vaccine, but also the freedom to choose not to. I'll likely get fired over this video, but I'm nonetheless exercising my First Amendment right to speak freely. I've fallen in line for over a year with these useless and effective mask mandates, and I will no more. I will not sit back and sheepishly watch as those who serve the people of this state are given unlawful orders which threaten their livelihoods should they choose not to fall in line. Discretion is one of the most important parts of my job as a police officer. I will use that discretion, and I will not enforce useless mask mandates or unlawful vaccine orders. Doing so is discrimination, which I would be fired for if it were any other discriminatory subcategory. Ms. Governor, I think you've forgotten that you were elected by the people, therefore you work for the people. The title governor does not give free rein to force medical decisions upon us. Police officer or not, an oath is permanent. I'll stand the blue line for the people I swore it to. If you're watching this video, I encourage you to look deep down and decide if you're going to fall in line as sheep or if you're going to stand up for the rights that we have for the short time we still have them. If you got the vaccine out of pure choice, that is your freedom. But if you got the vaccine out of fear, be careful.
The difference of this forced industrial revolution is it doesn't change what you are doing. It changes you if you take a genetic editing,
right.
Just as an example. It's you who are changed, and of course this has a big impact on your identity.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Sunday, September 19th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. I wanted to open with that clip. I thought about ending with that clip, but I wanted to open with it to make a point about, you know, what we're going to get into, obviously, but just what a lot of people are going through that a lot of people aren't talking about. And of course, the mainstream discussion doesn't really give you the full picture, the full scope of what people are dealing with. And, you know, sort of the best analogy example for what we're seeing today on a large scale is how all nurses were heroes up until 60% of them didn't want to take the shot. Then that whole conversation disappeared. What happened to all the dancing nurses? All these conversations, the weird, you know, propaganda push just disappeared. Now, were they suddenly no longer heroes, or were they ever all heroes? It just shows you it's all narrative and manipulation. There's a lot of police officers like that, a lot of firefighters, a lot of first responders, a lot of nurses and doctors and scientists and people all around the world, people working at restaurants that are absolutely being forced into a position that makes them wildly uncomfortable, that I would point out increases their danger in almost every single category of age group we can point to, and just any other category you could probably point to, in my opinion, based on what we've already researched. But that's all over the place. And we're going to go through some important stuff today that shows you that this is not being shown even inside important circles in regard to the conversation of policy, like the FDA or people inside the CDC, or throughout history, we've shown you people that are speaking out. And instead of actually getting regarded as, you know, possible information, they get pushed to the side. I had this conversation the beginning of the show day before yesterday in regard to that RT article about the waste and the malfeasance, the dishonest nature of the defense contractors in the U.S. government and how they're spending your tax dollars. And it turned out that they caught them. They saw them. They were very clearly on their face, lying, cheating, doing things they weren't. They're charging you for things they weren't doing, charging you for top of the line stuff. They then found local people that had no idea what they were doing to pay so they could make 30 times the profit. And then Halliburton, Raytheon, all of them. And it's all in these documentations that the government themselves found. And then guess what happened? Absolutely nothing. In fact, their contracts increased by threefold over the next so many years. These are the same people we're talking about today. That's what's happening. They're hiding the reality and they don't care about the fallout, right? So right now we're going to get into this information in regard to how we just saw the FDA, more specifically, the open panel part of the FDA conversation, which is a huge part that people aren't talking about in this FDA conversation. Of course, I saw this document somebody sent to me 2 days ago. It might have been from the Children Health Defense article that went out at the same time, but I was unfortunately unable to get to the conversation that we're having today because I was speaking at a rally yesterday. I will show you that today and go through some of the things I talked about. But we're going to go over that FDA document panel discussion that we have pointed to before, the panel they refused to have before the rushed, ridiculous approval of the 16 and up Comirnaty version of the new, you know, just the new labeled bottle, the whole thing we've already gone over, that they approved a certain part of it, right? And this the panel that was supposed to approve that part, that whole weird discussion, just was pushed off to the side, despite the fact that they said they had to do that. They always do that. And it was guaranteed, well, they promised they would. And then they said, well, there's no new information we can see. There's no indication of danger. Everything's safe and effective. So they pushed off the panel. We all know that's not true. A child could see that that's not true. To what degree? Of course, there's an argument to be had there, but they just pretended like it didn't matter. Now they had this panel. Like you told, they said they would. They were going to have the panel after the approval about other things, though. And they did talk about COVID-19, of course, because that was always the point. Now this panel had a lot of interesting things to say, but most importantly, there was the open section of this where people were allowed to say what they thought from professional positions, people that are experts. And almost every one of them came out and said things that'll blow your mind. And we're going to watch them today. And then, of course, you've probably heard already that they voted against the booster. Now, I want you to understand why that is. It's my opinion specifically that it's because of what these people said, but that's what this panel is, allowing people to speak, experts and the FDA panel themselves, and going over information and then coming to a vote. And if you don't think that the experts who spoke on this panel against this had any influence over how they voted, then I don't know what else to tell you. I mean, it's quite obvious that's how this goes. So we're going to show it to you and it's going to blow your mind only really because it's coming from the mainstream part of this, that they're saying exactly what we've been saying. Exactly. The dangers, the Veyers reports, every single thing we're talking about, and then they voted against it. Now, we're also going to talk about a few other things, including a really big study that was sent to me, an overview of information that was sent to me from doctors from COVID ethics, specifically one person from within that, possibly setting up an interview. I don't want to say the name just in case that we've decided they don't end up wanting to do so, but great people, great group, person individually I'm speaking about is a great person as well with great work so far as well. And this was a great study or overview of information that shows you some things that are going to shock you, things that are aligning with what we've already talked about, but specifically around immunological attack in your body. Now, this sounds interesting and alarming, but it's exactly the kind of thing we've been talking about before, even in regard to antibody-dependent enhancement kind of a concept. The bottom line is it comes down to your body attacking itself, and why that's happening won't surprise you at all. And this information is being kept from you, and as well as the illusion discussion overall, and I'll just leave it there. The COVID illusion will be the latter half of the show for my speech, as well as other things we've talked about that will probably shock you as well. A lot of the stuff in here are quite alarming, not because we haven't talked about it, but because it's now being sort of admitted in a very strange way by the mainstream media, or rather, I should say mainstream outlets, institutions is a better word for it. Things like the FDA. Now, before I get into all of that, I want to shout out really quickly that I'll be going to the Knowledge Conference in Kentucky tomorrow to speak. Now, I know that the way that he runs this, they don't really advertise locations and everything else because of past events, I'm sure, and things going on today because people are pretty crazy today. If you haven't gotten the ticket, I don't imagine there'll be any left at this point, but I still want to let people know that we'll be going. Now, on that note, in fact, it turns out because of a series of unfortunate events that I do have two tickets. For people out there that are interested, reach out to me. And if you're the lucky one, maybe I'll give you one, but reach out to me. If you want to come and you want to be there, if you have the ability to be there tomorrow in Kentucky, then reach out to me and I possibly have a ticket for you. Now, that being said, let's jump over into a couple of quick points before we get into the COVID-19 discussion right out of the gate, the FDA point. But I wanted somebody just share this with me. And it just, it'll, you know, it's, I hate, I dislike laughing about things when it's such a terrible discussion, but it's in a macabre sort of way that it's like, how ridiculous does this have to continue to be? The whole discussion about the bombing of Kabul and the targeting of the car and all the discussion around that during the time when it was right. This is when it was happening. We were reporting that they killed civilians. We were reporting that it was in fact just not only just killing civilians, but that they shot civilians on the ground in the airport, which by the way, has already been basically tacitly admitted to. Here we go again. They're admitting as of, let's see, this was the 17th. U.S. military admits it killed 10 civilians and targeted wrong vehicle in Kabul airstrike. This is from KCRA. Not that that necessarily means it's real, or specifically CNN, which even more so does not mean that it's real, but it does mean that the media is admitting something that we've already proven to you. This happened. People on the ground, Robert talked about this, Sarah Abdallah's reported on this. A lot of people have reported about what really happened here. And we were called fake news. People were censored. And here they are now admitting it after the fact. And this is always the case. Now, of course, you usually see the tie-in from these kind of things to what we're going to talk about today around COVID. More specifically, we have a talk about menstrual manipulation, injections causing menstrual disruption for women. You know, that thing that's very clearly happening that we've been telling you about for a long time, even based on Pfizer's own research, but they've been screaming fake news and conspiracy theory. Well, guess what? We already showed you the NIH has started to study it anyway, but even the Telegram is now pointing out, guys, this is a real thing and it's crazy. No one's talking about it. We'll get to that in a minute, but it's the same kind of overlapping point here. Was it fake because they said it was fake? Well, obviously it was real. They're now admitting it. So why was it fake then? It was fake then, the civilians being killed in Kabul, because the media was told it was fake and they did their job, which is to regurgitate what they're supposed to be saying. And now they're being told they can admit it for some reason, and now they're admitting it. So you have to reflect on how people are being removed and censored and disparaged and attacked for things that people are told are fake with no due diligence and no research around the topic. Here we are. Oh, yeah. Also, as a side note, your government just murdered 10 people and no one's going to do anything about it. This constantly happens. And it's not just our government. UK's government does it. France does it all the time. Israel does it all the time. Governments do this quite frequently. And it's the good guy versus bad guy governments we're supposed to talk about, right? Ooh, the bad guy ones do this. Well, that's bad. The good guy do it. Well, that's because they're fighting for freedom and it's all okay. Nah, it's all murder wherever it happens, right? This is what we have to recognize. And the kind of propaganda manipulation around this, whether it's COVID or foreign policy, is always ever present. Now, on another note around the interesting discussion of age of provocateurs is the right word for it, but I don't know if everybody even is familiar with this concept right now, but it's a very real thing that's constantly happening. Age of provocateurs are a constant thing in any kind of protest, any kind of, well, I guess you could call it agents in general, whether they provoke some kind of action makes them a provocateur, which is somebody who goes in dressed like somebody else, specifically maybe dressed like Antifa, dressed like Black Lives Matter, dressed like a Proud Boy, dressed however you want to think about it, and then creates violence and they blame the group that they're supposed to be with. Now, that doesn't happen every single time everywhere, but it definitely happens. And it's a very real thing. You can look this up in police documentation about how this has been used. But the point being, guess what they just caught live on video? This is Ford Fisher, always doing a great job, by the way. He's one of the ones that got censored a while back for filming. Right. All he does is films, documents events with no no, he's not directing the narrative. He's just filming and letting you look at it. And it's real documentation. He was censored because he just filmed things they didn't want you to see, which is very, very evident to what they were doing. But this is at the Justice for J6 and the rally. And it says police surround a masked man reportedly armed with a firearm. He tells them where the gun is. They pull out his badge. Guess what? He's undercover law enforcement without disarming or handcuffing him, police extracting from the event. Now, all this is showing is that there are, in fact, undercover agents. Now, that's not going to shock anybody. We all know that happens. But I just want you to consider the possibility of whether that could then lead to something that gets blamed on somebody else. And then whether or not that's an intentional thing. Right. I mean, certainly you could argue somebody could get caught up in something and they just end up doing something they shouldn't. And then they just get the hell out of there before they blame it on the police. That could happen. People make mistakes, but it's also that they could possibly be used to cause a violent act that then gets pointed to as a justification for other things. Does this mean that every single police officer there is part of it? No. Does this mean the entire police department? No. But it means at some level, these things do happen. And we've proven this in the past. So think about that in this context. Think about it in January 6th context and the way that they manipulate these stories to suit that agenda. Don't forget about the crossover we've always talked about. And we've already seen this happening. This absurd overlapping kind of white supremacy conservative working with outside forces, which doesn't make any sense, by the way. You're either white supremacist or you're not, and you're working with Iran. I don't know how that even makes sense, or working with Al-Qaeda. But those things are blending together foreign policy-wise, and they're domestic terrorists now. But guess what? They're also about to attack vaccine infrastructure. We've all seen this kind of swirling together. And we've already seen in the executive order by Joe Biden himself that people doing what I'm doing right now, informing you about other things, other views, are also being called domestic terrorists because we're spreading what they call medical misinformation, which leads to harm and death, which that's a totally subjective argument. But nonetheless, you see how it all comes together. So watch this clip and think about that.
I'm going to get the creds.
What happened?
Cruiser 100. We have the individual stops.
You guys just give us a little space, all right? Give us a little bit of space, all right?
Ask the white shirt what?
Are you undercover? Are you undercover? Is what he just said. Very clearly.
I'm not very part of the event.
I'm just here. Where do the guys are at? It's on the
board. Oh, and just so it's very clear, he said no right there. He said, I'm just here. As with his badge and his gun, of course. As he looks like somebody dressed in black with a baklava on. That makes a lot of sense. Well, I mean, I guess you could argue in the context of COVID-19, that might make sense. But you see, it's an interesting crossover on the whole mask concept, right? It's weird how in some contexts, like if you go into a store late at night with a full mask on, people are going to think you're doing something wrong, except now you're supposed to. You know, it's just strange. But anyway, the point is he said no, right? So what happens if that guy gets involved? He's there on his own accord. Well, what if he does something? You know what I mean? Like this is the kind of thing we saw at the January 6th discussion, where they're trying to frame this in a way. I argue in every sense, January 6th, as well as things like this, by the way, this is about January 6th, right? Are being manipulated. Does that mean everybody? No. We've already proven to you that there were multiple, verifiably, the FBI admitted people involved on different militia groups that were there as FBI agents. They infiltrated these groups and were there as part of those groups that day. FBI agents in two different groups. There was also a psychological operations military agent that, of course, was not there on that regard. But this is a woman that was there. Now, of course, could these all be coincidence? Yes, but we have to consider what this is being used to do and whether they would want to do this.
What's your name?
No.
What's your name, Jack?
Just don't drop it on my head. How about that?
Perfect.
Who do you want to take?
Right. What's your name?
All right. Give me a diamond this way.
Diamond this way.
Go straight.
Diamond.
Out of my way. Move back. Move back. Move back. Move back.
What's your name, sir? What's your name?
Right. And that the point they make in the tweet, and this makes it even more clear, they did all this without disarming or handcuffing him. There's no one misunderstanding that. Let's not pretend like these Capitol Police officers would remove this person and leave him armed in their custody without handcuffing him, or leave him armed in general. That's ridiculous. I mean, that's the gist of it. Now, you could argue here that these police officers, the Capitol Police officers, are doing what they think is right and arresting him, I guess, sort of, because he's there, not undercover, yet armed and not identifying himself, right? So you can see that there's a weird little, you know, but at the end of the day, he's still kind of a police officer. They saw his badge, so they're not going to cuff him. But you see that there's a weird situation happening here, right? If he's not undercover, what he's doing there is not okay. Well, whether he's there on official business or he's there on his own volition. There's something strange, and a lot of politics are involved in what's happening today, and we have to think about that. Now, I just thought this was a humorous tweet or meme to share as exactly what we're staring at. Jordan says, live shot from DC rally today. It's just, if you guys haven't seen, I forget actually what movie that's from with Steve Buscemi and is not the FBI, like, or acting like a kid, not the shirt, but acting like a kid with his backward hat and his skateboard over his shoulder. And he's like a 50-year-old man. It just looks funny. He's got a MAGA hat on, a shirt that says not the FBI. It's just ridiculous, right? We've seen examples like this in the past of Asian provocateurs being like caught flagrantly with pepper spray and weapons and things they're trying, while they're trying to do things, and they get shuttled away. You know, of course, the media doesn't talk about this. Now, one last point, just to kind of add on just the general opening here, as Gordon Dynamic points out, America is 5% of the global population. And in case you didn't know, and this has been a huge topic for me in the past, but obviously other things are happening today, they're consuming my attention, 5% of the global population, but guess what? They consume 65%. We as Americans consume collectively 65% of all antidepressant drugs. Think about that for a second. That's disgusting. And also recognize how horrific these things are for your body and what they do, and increase suicidal thoughts. And, you know, on a really, really personal and sad note, if many of you probably remember, my best friend in the world took his own life after was prescribed antidepressant drugs. Yeah, and that's just a really, really unfortunate situation for a lot of people out there who are being forced into a situation or told that it's the right situation without telling them that this, on the label, increases suicidal thoughts. How does that even make sense? Anyway, I could talk about that forever, but think about how wrong this is and how this is affecting your mental capacity, the 65% of people that are ridiculously taking these things. But moment going forward and getting into the beginning of COVID-19 part of this conversation, and before we get into the FDA, I wanted to point out how this interesting opening, there is an opening of even the mainstream beginning to make it, that it's acceptable to start pointing things out a little bit. Rob Schneider, by the way, has been doing a constantly good job of calling stuff out from the beginning of all this. He's been a really kind of transparency activist around vaccination for a long time. And this obviously is right in that wheelhouse. So he's been calling this stuff out, but I thought this was humorous. So this is Bernie Sanders, just apparently, as he points out, humorously enough, someone just woke up from a 2-year nap. Yeah, where the hell has he been? About all the things he's been screaming. Obviously, you know, I don't believe that he's to an entire degree honest about things he's saying. I don't think any politician really are, but it's interesting to me that we're watching this person who's been screaming, you know, talking about inequality and all these different things. And look at what's happening right now. And he just suddenly wakes up and he says the business model of the pharmaceutical industry, kind of just tapping into his like classically, you know, what are you? You're not supposed to say that right now, but he's been saying that for a long time, but weirdly quiet on it while that was obviously happening. But now he speaks up. The business model of the pharmaceutical industry is fraud. Oh, you don't say. But don't talk about Pfizer. Don't talk about Moderna, right? Their greed is literally killing Americans. Well, I literally agree with you. But he's going to get attacked for this because they're going to say, oh, you're going to give them vaccine hesitancy. He's probably going to come out with a follow-up tweet that says, vaccines are good. Take your injection. But that's this. He's talking about the overarching point. Yes, their greed is literally killing Americans, and people have pointed it out for decades. The BMJ, in fact, the WHO. I mean, they've called this out and said they're lying, making pandemics of fear. And here we are yet again, and we just can't learn from the lessons. They have spent billions buying politicians, and several of their executives became billionaires during the pandemic. Yeah, I mean, look, it doesn't matter who says this, guys. I don't care whether you agree with Bernie Sanders or not. Obviously, I don't. I think he's absolutely not on your side. But what he's saying, doesn't matter who says it, that's true. That's accurate. I don't care if the child on the street said it. You're correct. Several of their executives became billionaires during this pandemic. Their days of calling the shots in DC must come to an end. I mean, he's literally calling out what we are telling you is happening. You see what I mean? Like, this is just, it's crazy to me. But you know what? I don't want to be like, good job, Bernie Sanders, because I don't believe it's genuine. I don't believe he's really doing this for the right reasons. I think he's saying it now that it's safe, and that's cowardly. But regardless, good. I'm glad it's being said, and I'm glad it's getting out there. Like, I'm trying really hard lately not to be so, go to the next point. Jimmy Dore's interview with Robert Malone was well done, and I want to give him a shout out for the interview, and I'm glad he did it. You know what I mean? Because I was kind of jokingly toying this out before and kind of, you know, my point is it's frustrating for a lot of people like us that have been really trying to call attention to the very things that some of these bigger quasi independent media people are doing now. And it's just, and without a lot of credit back. And I'm not calling for credit. I don't want the credit. I don't care. We're trying to get the information out. So the point is just to recognize my point in showing you this stuff again is that he did a good job and I'm glad he's doing it. I hope he continues down this path. But nonetheless, please continue to find other interviews as well, because there's a lot of information that wasn't included in this one that is really important. And I think the reason a lot of people like my, like, I don't know, a lot of the platforms out there do not end up pointing to the stuff that we are talking about is because we go to a depth that makes them uncomfortable. That we can prove. Nonetheless, it makes them, because they're dancing a kind of quasi mainstream independent line. And that's the point. But nonetheless, great job, because he did a good job on this. And I think that Robert Malone being on this is, look, that's something that the YouTube world doesn't look kindly on, in my opinion. So good for him. And I just wanted to say that, as well as the fact that I saw this, interestingly enough, Kim Iverson was talking about the alarming data from Israel. Good for her. Right. I mean, she, I know that I give her a hard time for being on the Hill, but you know, I, this is, she's doing a good job on this, but I wanted to make another point is that this is not breaking news as much as it's now being called breaking, even by the Children's Health Defense. It's like this big article, but, oh, look at, she's talking about this. And maybe it's worthy because somebody of her stature is talking about it, but this is the most superficial level of this conversation. Cause all this whole video is 13 minutes of there's an extra spike now, and we don't know why, just showing you the data. And a lot of conversation around it. Well, that's, we've been talking about this for months, since the beginning of the year, in fact. So the point is that look at this, give her credit for beginning to talk about something that's very difficult to do on YouTube and elsewhere, but please go everywhere else, whether my platform or not, because there's a whole a deep well of information just below where they're scratching. Because again, they're afraid to be called conspiracy theorists. The point is, Israel's own data, Gibraltar's data, Malta's data, Iceland's data, Scotland's data, all the ones we've shown you correlate exactly with this and show you that it's not just some weird anomaly. It's obvious what's happening based on their scientific research. So not speculating here is a smart thing to do, but it's not speculating when you're pointing to peer-reviewed research, right? But right now, in the quasi-mainstream sphere, they're afraid to touch on that. And I understand it, but I don't respect it. I think we should all be going way over the top right now. Anyway, the point in general was to show you that there's a lot of people out there trying to get into this, and I think it's a good thing, but I hope everybody continues to go a lot of other places. The Defender did a great job on the 17th, breaking down the FDA panel, which we're going to talk about next, which I think is a huge, huge, this is important, but there's a problem with this right now. And it's not that people are necessarily misrepresenting the situation, but there's just not context being given. So there's a videos being shared of this, like little clips. And people are sharing it everywhere and talking about it like the FDA, but it's not necessarily the FDA. This was an open panel part of the FDA, an open hearings, this conversation of the panel, which is not the FDA, right? Even when I first saw this, that's what I was like, oh, looks like the FDA was, you know, we're admitting some stuff. And now you dig into it and you'll see that that's not the case, but it's just as relevant because of how the panel ended up voting. As they say, breaking, the FDA panel overwhelmingly rejects Pfizer booster for healthy people 16 and older. That's a really big deal. Doesn't mean it's not going to go back the other way, just like it did last time. An illusion of some kind of accountability or resistance. Regardless, there was an opening here for the open discussion for people to step in as experts and lay down the facts. As it says, the 16-2 vote, 16-2. And this is while Biden is basically... Once this is shoved in, they're going to force this just like Israel's doing. But it's not, we can't miss how they're you have to get the third shot in Israel. Otherwise you're not fully vaccinated. And now they're already stepping into the fourth shot realm already. Are we going to pretend like that's not going to happen the same way here? The government has already mandated this for large businesses. This is, remember when government mandates, when Paskey says, we're not allowed to do that. That's not what we're going to do. We're going to let businesses make the choice. And then the moments later, it's like, well, now you have to do it. It's just so dishonest. Of course, these are government mandates, and that's problematic, illegal, immoral, a lot of things. 16-2 vote came after a sharp debate in which many of the panel's independent experts, including infectious disease doctors and statisticians, that's funny, I always want to, statisticians, that's not, I feel like I'm missing a syllable there, challenged whether the data justified a broad rollout of extra shots when the vaccines appear to still offer robust protection against severe COVID disease and hospitalization. Now, that's what they're saying. I adamantly disagree with that. And that's not my opinion. This is what gets so frustrating about this whole thing is that we're talking about something that we're it doesn't mean that I'm saying this is 100% the case, but how can you verifiably say this is the case when I have scientific research, peer-reviewed research that says the exact opposite? At the very least, it's not defined yet. Right? That's the problem with these two sides of this false dichotomy is that one side saying this is the absolute fact and you have to do this and you don't have a choice. We're over here saying, well, Everybody should have a choice, including you and me, whichever way you want to go. And we should be able to discuss this new information that no one's talking about. That's it. Doesn't that seem a little bit interesting? The contrast there, who's actually stepping, you know, it's, there's an obvious side here that is absolutely attacking freedom in every possible way and saying that we're over here. In fact, just like the mask mandate discussion, that we're somehow attacking your rights by not doing something you're forcing us to do. It's just, it's clown world. I mean, this is literally Orwellian. This is backward. Now, as it says here, following an intense day-long public discussion, 8 hours, in fact, a panel of scientific advisors to the U.S. to the FDA voted 16-2 against recommending this third shot. Now, what's interesting is this, just like in the U.K., as well as in the U.S. before, that doesn't mean the FDA is going to listen to that panel, which should blow you away, because the panel is supposed to be like the experts they bring in for this exact purpose, and then they just don't listen to them. It's happened before, and it just shows you that it's all politics are what, you know, lead the day. It says the vote came after a sharp debate in which many of the panel's independent experts, including infectious disease doctors, statisticians, I just read that, challenged whether the data justified a broad rollout. And it says when the vaccines appear to still offer robust. Oh, yeah, I just read that. Okay, so the issue of whether or not to approve boosters has become increasingly contentious, dividing scientists both outside and inside the FDA, including two scientists who recently announced they are leaving the agency because of pressure from the Biden administration to approve boosters, despite a lack of data to support a third shot. Like, the simple fact that you have people from within, like, this is not the kind of way they're framing this, where you've got the debunked fringe conspiracy theorist anti-science doctors over there, which doesn't even make sense, and then the mainstream ones, which you're supposed to listen to, except when one of those mainstream guys barely steps out of line, they're suddenly a conspiracy theorist, now they're crazy and they're over there. Debunked their whole life. But that's not what we're talking about here. These are people from within their circle, and they're divided. And then you've got the people like the other experts we're always interviewing over here that have continually said that they're wrong. So how are we still pretending like this is completely safe and effective, the benefits outweigh the risk, and everything's completely sound? They don't even agree. I mean, I hope we are beginning to see how clearly we have been deceived this whole entire time, if this is where we are now, well into this. I mean, if this is the most investigated safe thing, I mean, the long safety trials in history, we should be only getting safer as it goes forward, not the other way around. But obviously, that's not what's happening. It says the Biden administration had hoped for the FDA would approve a third shot for the Pfizer vaccine in time to begin rolling out boosters for Pfizer's recipients next week. Well, let's get into what they said, right? It's not just that they overwhelmingly rejected it. It's important to hear what these people had to say, and it will be interesting at the very least. Now, I believe, let me grab this video since I did download it and see if that's an easier way for you guys to watch it. Usually the sound is much better this way. So let me grab the appropriate moment here. Oh, so I wanted to play this first. So at 4:03, this is where he opens with the discussion about how this is an open hearing. Well, I mean, I don't have to necessarily play it. The point's right there. From the podcast, it says right in front of this, open public hearing session. Okay. So this whole thing, as you can see here, is right. You can see at the bottom, vaccines and related biological products advisory committee, right? That's what was supposed to meet before this so-called approval. And I don't mean that it wasn't approved. I mean that it's a flimsy, illegal, rushed, and unjustified approval for a specific area, even though they're acting like everything's safe and good now. But vaccines related biological products advisory committee. Now, as you can see, they go past the open part of it. And then there's the committee part of it. Then there's the open public hearing. Now going from there to there's two specific people I want you to hear. 409 is the first one. Let me go to that. I believe this is right here. Okay, so here you'll have to hear the latter part of this other person. Oh, and I'm actually glad. I think this is important, actually, to get to what he's saying on these last slides right here. Right. Okay, this is interesting. So the guy before she starts speaking here, look at what it says right there. Now, most of these other people are there some of these people that are saying that it's good and they should continue this. And, you know, what's even interesting is some of them are saying this is dangerous and it's not working and that's why we need more, which doesn't make much sense. But this person says right there, you can see the FDA must determine how to approve vaccines as fast as viruses spread. You know why they're saying that? Because I'll confirm this in another point today. They're doing that because the mRNA platform is designed that way. And I'll show you right in the Pfizer breakdown of their transcript of a recent meeting with Bank of America and their committee, which is, you know, that's the way to make things safe with Bank of America. They're openly stating, well, we can make a new vaccine based on variant in 100 days, right? I'll show you. That should scare the hell out of you. You know why they say that? Because they've already told you they don't need to safety test anything else. That's it. And they're claiming, that's pretending like the safety stuff they've already done was enough in the first place, which it clearly wasn't. But they're saying all we need is new genetic code. We pump it in the computer and we pump out the new vaccine. I've told you this before and I'll show you again. And that's crazy. So that's what they're saying right now. We need to make these as fast as possible. Boom, boom, boom. New variant, new vaccine. Boom, boom, boom. Oh, come in for your new vaccine shot next week. Boosting with the wild type vaccine increases the chance that efficacy will drop rapidly. Exactly. What's crazy is they can openly state these things and I can report them, or I can have a conversation with someone at the rally who is about ready to break down with anger and they just don't want to hear it. This is the fact. They're telling you this. Boosting with the wild type, meaning the only ones that are out there, the injections based on the original wild type spike protein, the first one. And using that now, especially as the main study from the Journal of Science of Infectious Disease pointed out against the Delta variant, which is what they're telling you is most predominant right now, it literally leads to an increased risk. Specifically, they name antibody-dependent enhancement. And that's what he's saying right there. Increases chance that the vaccine will drop, boosting with this versus now. But let's go forward.
Thank you, Mr. Newton. The next speaker is Dr. Jessica Rose.
Let me know that the sound is okay for everyone. I can always go back to the other video.
My name is Dr. Jessica Rose, and I'm a viral immunologist and computational biologist. I've taken it upon myself to become a VAERS analyst to organize the data into comprehensive figures to convey information to the public in both published work and video mediums. Safety and efficacy are the cornerstones of the development and administration of biological products meant for human use. Risk is a measure of the probability of an adverse event occurring and the severity of the resultant harm to health of individuals in a defined population. Safety is a judgment of the acceptability of this risk in a specified situation. Efficacy is the probability of benefit to individuals in a defined population from a medical technology. Refer to slide one. This is a bar plot that shows the past 10 years of VAERS data plotted against the total number of adverse event reports for all vaccines for the years 2011 through 2020, and for COVID-associated products only for 2021.
I mean, we've talked about this many times, and what I just still can't even wrap my mind around is how people out there, whether or not, even people that don't just dismiss VAERS out of hand, they think this is fake news. That's all that, where'd that graph come from? That's not even real. I've literally heard that response. This is the FDA, the jointly run FDA CDC, what's the right word for it? The Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. It's a jointly held system run by the FDA and the CDC. It's the primary, if not only, place for most people to report, including doctors, what they are seeing. Remember, and I'll briefly touch on this in a moment, possibly, that 53 deaths in the past of in administration of an injection was enough to cause this. That's unverified, same thing. The 1976 swine flu had three unverified deaths, three, and that was enough for them to stop the whole damn thing. This is real information. Just because they say it's unverified doesn't mean it's not accurate. And that's something I want you to think about as we go past even the VAERS discussion, right? What if somebody, people are reporting that we'll get into the menstrual discussion, right? Where women are saying, I've got menstrual problems based on this injection. They go, that's not true. That's fake news. So if they're not going to listen to people reporting this stuff in any sense, why are they going to listen to any problem? I mean, this is a system that's been created to dismiss anything that does not align with what they're saying, telling you is supposed to happen. Can we not admit, even as people that agree with everything that's happening, that some of this gets lost in translation, that someone out there is experiencing a real problem that no one cares about because of the way they're dismissing everything? An honest person could admit that. And apparently they don't care about those people, right? Those ones don't matter. That's crazy.
The left bar plot represents all adverse event reports, and the right bar plot represents all death adverse event reports. There's an over 1,000% increase in the total number of adverse events for 2021, and we are not done with 2021.
Not even done yet. Think about that. Somebody comments in the chat. I'm not sure. I haven't confirmed this, but they're saying that Jessica Rose, who's speaking right now, worked with James Lyons Weiler, and that's great. If that's true, that's fantastic. But they're saying that she works in Israel. Good for her for speaking up, right? Doesn't surprise me at all. James Lyons Weiler has been a champion of truth throughout this whole thing.
This is highly anomalous on both fronts. These increased reporting rates are not due to increased rates in injections and not due to simulated reporting. This has been shown using a comparative analysis of influenza data. The onus is on the public health officials, the FDA, the CDC, and policymakers to answer to these anomalies and acknowledge the clear risk signals emerging from VAERS data and to confront the issue of COVID injectable product use risks that, in my opinion, outweigh any potential benefit associated with these products.
Just so you didn't, in case you didn't hear that, she's saying any benefit or any risk. Well, let's play it again. I think I have backwards. Oh, you've got to be kidding me. That's frustrating. I forgot this is a super long video. Sorry about that.
Injection and not due to simulated reporting. This has been shown using a comparative analysis of influenza data. The onus is on the public health officials, the FDA, the CDC, and policymakers to answer to these anomalies and acknowledge the clear risk signals emerging from VAERS data
right.
and to confront the issue of COVID injectable product use risks that, in my opinion, outweigh any potential benefit associated with these products.
Right. The risks that we're clearly seeing, the indication of this outweigh any potential benefit. I mean, there's just no way to misunderstand that. I mean, this is, if you can point to this and see the contrast between previous years to now, and the only answer you have is, well, that must be a bunch of liars without any due diligence. How do we not see how subjective and dishonest that is? And like I just said, that guarantees that at some degree, even if you're right, some of them are real, right? I mean, look at the past years, some of them. And I guess you don't care about those people. I mean, look at the number. They're, right now, we're talking about all combined, and this is 500,021. Or excuse me. Yeah. Yes. Okay. And the point is, look at that. This is just 2021. Look at the numbers of the previous years. Go to 2019, 48,444. So let's just say that all those are real from before then, because apparently nobody lied before 2021. 50,000 people are getting lost in this 521,000 number, even according to the people that dismiss it all. Do we not care about those 50,000 people that are struggling with problems, neurological problems, blood clots, all sorts of things? Apparently not. But it's all for your health.
Especially for children. Slide 2. This is a time series plot that shows the total cumulative number of cardiovascular, immunological, and neurological adverse events for 2021 associated with COVID products. When the cumulative absolute counts are normalized to the total number of fully injected individuals in the U.S., we can see that 1 in 660 individuals are succumbing to and reporting immunological adverse events associated with the COVID products. The underreporting factor is not considered here. Slide 3. This is a phylogenetic tree showing the emergence of the alpha and delta variants of the COVID-19.
Now, you've already seen this. I showed you this myself. And I think this was shared by... Shoot, I forget the doctor's name. I can picture his profile on Twitter. He's one of the ones that he's doing a great job. And he keeps sharing a lot of this stuff from Israel. And this is one of the ones from Israel. Well, actually, this is US and Israel. But what it shows you is the after the administration of the injection, if you don't understand what you're seeing, just this is variants. You see the explosion of the variants the moment the vaccination began. And my point from before this was the same thing, that if their argument is unvaccinated people cause the variants, how in the world did the variants not start popping out every 2 weeks until after the injection started? There was an entire 6 month period or more in 2020 where there was just injections being given and things being tested. I say that backwards, where there was mostly unvaccinated people. There were injections being given in the trials, remember? But in 2020, their claim is that unvaccinated people, that was predominantly while this was circulating. So if that's the case, how is it not that there were vax variants not popping off constantly everywhere because there was far more people unvaccinated with far more spread? Then you begin to get past that red line and you see as the injections increase, what do you continue to see? A dramatic increase in variants. This is just basic understanding here, guys. On top of that is all the scientific research I've continued to show you. All the peer-reviewed science from before COVID-19 that pointed to how the imperfect flu vaccinations were clearly causing their variants, or how the understanding of imperfect vaccinations that don't stop transmission very clearly create exactly what we're dealing with here. And this is simple information that has become very, very clear that they just don't want you to see. And that's why these experts are standing up on the FDA panel and saying, guys, this is a problem. Now, this, in my opinion, very clearly influenced the vote. Dang it. Sorry, but dang it. Hit the wrong button. Son of a gun. Go back. Hold on. I think that was basically it from her part of it. There's one more person I want you to see after this. Let me just get right there. Okay.
emergence of variants of concern. If we continue, this is a Farlaw genetic tree showing the emergence of the Alpha and Delta variants of COVID-19 over time. The emergence of both of these variants and their subsequent clustering arose in very close temporal proximity to the rollout of the COVID products in Israel. Israeli data from the Ministry of Health and Our World in Data reveals that 98.1%.
I'm not sure what this was. I think some kind of translation thing she had on. She seems like it was her computer and she just made a mistake. So just it gets past it and she continues. But while I stopped it, just to be clear, what she's saying here is that these aren't all variants, but just the point is how you can see them explode. The two we're talking about directly following this. And that has only continued, as we can clearly see. Mu and Lambda and everything else down the Greek alphabet.
Oh my God. Sorry about that. Israel is one of the most injected countries, and it appears from this data that this represents a clear failure of these products to provide protective immunity against emergent variants and to prevent transmission. Regardless of...
Clear failure to stop these the variants and from stopping transmission. Exactly what we all know is happening, even what they've grudgingly admitted. These are experts telling you the facts, right? This isn't some anti-science fringe weirdo. These are experts. The next one's even more so.
How many additional shots administered? And this begs the question as to whether these injections were...
And I cut her off on the main point there. She's saying that there's no effect on transmission or variants, no matter how many boosters are given. That's what she said.
...rollouts are driving the emergence of the new variants.
Exactly.
There's clear and present danger of the emergence of variants of concern if we continue with these alleged booster shots. Thank you.
Exactly. She said they will drive the variants. That's what she said.
Thank you, Dr. Rose. Next speaker is Professor Retsef Levy.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Retsef Levy. I hope you can see my personal title slide labeled as slide A on the bottom right. I'm on the faculty of the MIT Sloan School of Management. I have no conflict of interest to disclose today, and my presentation represents only my individual opinions and does not reflect in any way on the positions of MIT.
Okay, in case you didn't hear him, just this is a professor at MIT School of Management.
Next to slide B. Since the Pfizer's request for the approval of the boosters is partially based on the so-called study conducted in Israel, it is important to understand that the booster vaccination campaign in Israel was anything but a carefully designed study.
And this is what we're continuing to hear in honest circles. It's verifiable when reflecting on other studies of the same regard. This is what they talked about in the original studies. The hot flash in a pan kind of a study where they get the results they're looking for in a really short, truncated time and claim that's working. And then what do you see? 3 months, 4 months later, waning antibody. Now we need more boosters. Well, same thing's happening in the booster. They're doing a really quick smell. It's what we've called in the past p-hacking in regard to scientific studies. Just look up the term. It's about you find ways to manipulate the study cycle, the study metrics, the study settings, or the data itself in a way that makes it look the way you want it to. So you get funding. So you get people who support it, regardless. This is what we talk about when we talk about the bastardization of these industries, whether we're talking science or medicine. You see politics working their way in. The people who fund these studies are the people who are not scientists, not experts. These are people that are politically driven. And you can talk to doctors about this or scientists where they say, well, the only way they have a career is if they get funding for the things they're doing. And the only way they get funding is if the people at the top are interested in what they're trying to find out. You could see how that very clearly leads in a very specific direction. That's why people like James Lyons Weiler are trying to do their own peer-reviewed process. Because you don't need the government involved to peer review. Peer review is about other experts reviewing other science. The fact is, when you get the government in the middle of that, that's how you get the broken nature of this.
In a matter of less than 6 weeks, Israel moved from its initial intention to vaccinate the over 60 population to vaccinating anyone above the age of 12, and it is now about to mandate booster vaccination for anyone to maintain green passport status. This does not allow any reliable learning, definitely not in such a short amount of time. And please understand that the adverse event surveillance system in Israel is truly dysfunctional, particularly around the booster deployment. I know from personal experience that the Ministry of Health in Israel does not address appropriately major concerning safety signals. Next to slide C.
And this is exactly what we're seeing in this country, right? That shouldn't surprise you at all. They are not concerning themselves with the safety signals, whether from Veyers or anywhere else. They're just ignoring this stuff and acting like it doesn't apply because it's either fake news or it's not proven or whatever. Ignoring things because you don't want to see them is not science-based. Right, we can very clearly see there's enough to indicate that there should be research to be done. And this is why they end up quietly circling back and doing things like on the menstrual problem.
This leaves us with the question, what drove this?
By the way, that's after they dismiss people that are saying they have that problem, after people like us report on how that's being done. And it's all fake news until they quietly start investigating it. How in the world can it be fake news if they haven't done if they're investigating whether it's possibly happening? How can we be censored for discussing that it could be happening? Let that one work out in your mind for a second.
It's massive booster deployment. Next to slide D. Trying to reach vaccine-induced herd immunity by reducing transmission rates will be consistent with the stated goal of the agreement that Israel signed with Pfizer, as you can see on slide D on the left-hand side. The problem is that by now we already know from mounting evidence that reaching herd immunity based on the current vaccines does not seem like a feasible or realistic goal. Not surprisingly, as you can see on the right-hand side of slide D, Israel continues to have among the highest infection rates per capita in the world. Next to slide E. You all listened to a presentation of the Israeli Ministry of Health that praises the efficacy of the boosters. I would like to caution this premature celebration and remind you that similar statements were made just 6 months ago around February on the two initial doses.
Right, exactly. They point to a small decline, which, by the way, the correlation is what it's funny how I can constantly tell you correlation is not causation, but the moment they get correlation that works for what they're saying, oh, it's proof every time. And obviously that's not the case, as we can see. And the point they keep making is that this is the most triple vaccinated group in the world, and they are worse off than anybody right now. There's no way you make sense of that outside of just apply, like I said, you know, holding up the data, squinting at it just right in the sun and being like, that's the truth right there. That's what we want you to say. Instead of Occam's razor, which is all things considered, the simplest explanation tends to be the right one. That you can obviously see a correlation, which doesn't prove it, with the introduction of the injection. But what you can see is the other scientific research that's continued to bolster that, showing you that if you've got natural immunity and get injected, it causes problems, or showing you that all these other things that very clearly back up why that's happening. That's not guessing, guys. That's making an educated estimation based on the scientific research. What they're doing is just pointing to you, telling you what they want you to think. I mean, if we're the ones pointing at the latest peer-reviewed scientific research, then what are they pointing to?
Note on slide E on the right-hand side that COVID-19 deaths in Israel, in spite of all of the boosters, are on the rise, whereas in other countries, including many states in the U.S., they seem to be on downward trend at the moment.
Right, downward trend, and that's especially places that are not doing that. Like, isn't it funny how we just don't talk about Sweden today? That doesn't count, right? Sweden doesn't exist. We don't like to talk about that place because that makes our narrative not look good.
The data from Israel also highlights that the main risk of serious COVID-19 outcomes is focused to a large extent among the completely unvaccinated population and almost entirely in the over 61. On the left-hand side of slide E, you can also see data from table 1 in a research paper by the Ministry of Health in Israel that suggests that the benefits from the boosters compared to the prior two doses in preventing serious illness might be much more limited than desired. There is much more to say about the problems of the current booster efficacy study.
Now, just so it's clear, this is the kind of point I'm talking about in other situations where this person, whether he is trying to, you know, what he stated about the unvaccinated is not true. It's not backed up by all the data we're getting, even from the mouth of the prime minister himself. Naftali Bennett himself spoke out about this in Israeli, of course, and the media here didn't talk about it. We pointed it. We showed you on the show. We showed you that doctor on their live Israeli television show telling you that most people were vaccinated in the hospitals. We pointed to the hospital director himself, who said in multiple hospitals, 90% of the people there were vaccinated. We've shown you this all over the place. Scotland just admitted that most people in their hospitals are double jabbed. We've shown you all of this stuff. So just regurgitating the narrative because, I mean, whether he's just trusting what he's seeing from authority figures or, you know, whatever it is, they're focused in on the booster right now. But what he said there is not true. That I'm showing you the data. It's not an opinion. Now, is it possible that data is incorrect? Of course it is. But what are they pointing to? We're showing you the data. That's what we should be pointing to make this case. They're just saying what the narrative is based on what the CDC said in the very beginning of this, based on inaccurate data from the first part of the year, while we're talking about the second part. The first part of the year, most people are unvaccinated. So what do you think that's going to show you? Why would they take a selective part of the data to tell you about what's happening now? Because they're trying to manipulate you with data. That's my opinion on it, but look into it for yourself. Look at our past shows and look at the data we've shown you. They're saying the opposite.
Next to slide F. But let me conclude by stressing how important it is to transition from emergency strategies to long-term ones. Slide F outlines five important considerations in doing so. They are self-explanatory. I hope you will hold off of approving this booster for broad use, at least until such a strategy is developed. Thank you for your attention.
So you can see that a lot of these, even the people that were sort of kind of pointing out the illusion here, are not necessarily saying like we shouldn't be doing this, it's all terrible. It's more of like we need to alter our strategy so this booster makes sense. You know, and that's alarming to me as well. But what's interesting nonetheless is that there's a lot of little truth bombs slipping through here in a lot of different ways from these experts. And I think this reached a lot of people that didn't like just average people that were like, what did that person just say? It's important. This next one it's even more important.
Thank you, Dr. Levy. The next speaker is Dr. Joseph Raymond.
Don't think it's
hello, this please, if you can go to my first slide. Hello, my name is Dr. Joseph Raymond. Conflicts to declare.
Now, this is an interesting one because the next one's the one I was thinking of, but this is interesting only because he's essentially saying like we need to reduce vaccine hesitancy. Now his argument though is really telling because what he's saying is, look, these people, he calls them activists, these activists out there, which is not incorrect, but this, you know, more than just activists, these activists out there are saying things that we can't disprove. So we need to find the data that disproves that, which is a little bit subjective, isn't it? Like when you shouldn't be seeking out an endpoint, you should be looking into it with the scientific method and letting it show you what the truth is. If you go into research with an endpoint in mind, you typically find that. That's the point. But regardless, what he's telling you is that they, even as they're telling you we're all fake news and conspiracy theorists, don't have the data to disprove the facts that we are putting forward. And that's what he's saying himself. Not that we're just making things up, but we're pointing to other things, not saying a fact, but saying, look, here's scientific study that says, look, this is interesting. This is a problem. And sometimes, like I said, sometimes saying this is 100% the case, like the peer-reviewed study about antibody-dependent enhancement back in 2020 that said this is a very specific and significant risk. No one said anything about it. This is what he's talking about. You'll see what I mean.
I'm an emergency physician educated at Cornell Medical School. My residency was Charity Hospital in New Orleans, and I've been working in this region since. Where I work, over 65% of the population are not vaccinated. I'm here today to ask for help for those working the front line to help us reduce vaccine hesitancy. For this, we need larger trials that demonstrate the vaccine reduced hospitalization without finding evidence of serious harm. I know many think...
So just right out of the gate, realize that he just admitted that these weren't long enough, right? We've known this, and this is what even experts on, you know, all walks of life have pointed this out on the side of the fake news people and even the side of the mainstream people, as they would put it. But people on, you know, Forbes put an article back in 2020 that made this very clear back before it was super contentious that this was rushed, it was short, it was truncated, and it was all for your safety, right? This is undeniable. Whether or not you think this thing is safe and effective, that's very clear. The medium at the average length of these kind of trials was 23 months or is 23 months. This at most, even according to Forbes and other mainstream articles, is 6 months at most. So he's telling you they weren't long enough, and what they need is longer ones because he's somehow convinced that will prove that these are safe. But if you don't know, you don't know.
The vaccine hesitants are dumb or just misinformed. That's not at all what I've seen. In fact, typically,
I don't want to go back because this is a long video, but what he just said there is the argument is that anti-vaxxers or, you know, whatever, people like us in talking about this is just the general sentiment are dumb and uninformed, but that's not what he's seeing. Now, that's also backed up by MIT's study about this. This was, specifically around masks, but they made the same point. They said the media tends to promote these or highlight people like this, anti-maskers or whatever you want to call it, as uneducated on anti-science. But guess what their finding was? Remember that in fact, by and large, these people are far more invested in the scientific method than the people arguing this in the mainstream circles. That was what MIT found. that people are actually diving into this concept, diving into the scientific method, educating themselves, refusing things that don't that are just subjective. How in the world can MIT find that about people that, and yet we were dismissed as conspiracy theorists? It's because the mainstream, the media, the government, the politics, that's what drives everything. There's just no way other way to say that. And here he is telling you the same thing, that that's not what he found. People in this on side of this are not dumb and uneducated.
Independent of education level, the vaccine hesitant I've met in the ER are more familiar with vaccine studies and more aware of their own COVID risk than the vaccinated.
Did you hear that? People like you are more aware of the risks and more informed about the injection than people who are going along with what the government tells them. Yes, this is just one expert's opinion, but you have to recognize that if it's being spoken on the FDA panel and they voted in line with what they're cautioning, that there's some truth to this. Regardless of that, the point should be you should do your due diligence and prove or disprove what he's saying. And the third point is that I've proven what he's saying 100 times over. Hopefully you've been watching these shows. You know, because you're one of these people and you aggressively dig into the scientific research and read more than the abstract and actually try to understand words that you don't know. And, you know, you evolve your education here. I mean, look, like I've said before, in the beginning of all this, there's plenty. All of us have been on a journey through this stuff. Suddenly the entire country is medical experts and scientific experts. Not honestly, but a lot of us have broadened out into this and understood research because this is the main topic seems today. So I need to understand these things. And I feel like I have a pretty damn good handle on it, but I'm humble enough to understand that there's plenty I don't know. That's why we continue to be open-minded, question everything, and look for experts out there to give us opinions on this stuff or their expert opinions. That's why, guys, because we care enough about the truth. Now, just so we're clear, there's plenty of people in the independent media or whatever sphere you want to talk about outside the mainstream that are just as dishonest as the mainstream media. People that are, whether that's because they want to lie for a clear reason, because they want to, you know, whatever. Or they just uninformed, don't know, are too subjective in their research. That happens everywhere. It's not trying to make it on one side. But he's telling you based on his position that it's mostly the educated on this side of it that he's seen.
Next slide, please. For example, many of my nurses have refused the vaccine, despite having seen COVID-19 cause more death and devastation than most people have. I ask them, why refuse the vaccine? They tell me while they've seen the firsthand dangers of COVID in the elderly, the obese, diabetics, they think their risk is low. They're not wrong. Next slide, please. One nurse showed me this Oxford risk calculator.
Look at that.
A 30-year-old female has about a 1 in 7,000 chance of catching COVID and being hospitalized over 90 days. She asked me, can I assure her that the studies found her risk of serious harm from the vaccine is lower than her risk of hospitalization? The truth is, I can't. Our trials weren't big enough.
Exactly.
They weren't big enough to identify the vaccines cause myocarditis, yet now we know they do.
Exactly.
Next.
Or what about the other ones we know? Vaccine-induced thrombosis, thrombocytopenia, blood clots, Bell's palsy. All of these have been verified. Verified. Now, the point is they'll argue how common they are, but they have verified this can happen. Myocarditis is the one that I just can't get past. As the most recent from The Lancet, and I believe it was the Journal of Infectious Disease. I always say infectious medicine, it makes me laugh in my head, but infectious disease. They found quite clearly, and by the way, even the FDA, or excuse me, the CDC's own document that we went over on the brass show about myocarditis, which I hope you will look into, it very clearly found an increased risk, not just for some people, not just in small ways or not that's about the same as the usual you'd find in the population. No, a dramatic increase in risk. I mean, it was 200, they would expect 2 to 15 cases, they saw 230. And on top of that, I hope you will check out the previous shows we've done. On top of that, it found that this can increase 25 to 56% your risk of mortality over the next 10 years. This was a study done in 2009 about myocarditis, and those were non-serious cases. Just all of this information is there. So what he's telling you is we didn't catch that. They weren't big enough. We know they weren't big enough. What he's showing you is what we keep talking about. If you as a 30-year-old female out there have a 0.0004% chance of dying from COVID-19, 1 in 250,000, you're not in danger. You are statistically speaking not at risk. That's not statistically significant. And even your risk of hospitalization is 0.0143%. You're simply not in danger, guys.
Slide, please. A recent observational study suggests the risk of vaccine-induced myocarditis in young males is higher than their risk of hospitalization from COVID.
And you know what? I should say to that last comment. What I'm saying, and I should be more specific about this because of plenty of people who want to take things out of context. But when I say that, obviously, look, there's risk in your life always. That's the point about the Swiss policy research discussion, where they say, well, COVID death is about the same in line with natural mortality. The average death, not age, is about the same as your average death, you know, the natural mortality, which means that they found that it's the same risk you have of stepping out your front door and living your life. You could die. You could hit by a car. Plenty of stuff could happen. That's science, peer-reviewed. That's a scientific research. I don't believe that was actually peer-reviewed. It's Swiss policy research. They just ignore it today. But there's always risk. There's risk for everything. There's risk from the flu. People die from the flu every year, we're told. People die from all sorts of things. I only say that because of how obviously the CDC manipulates those numbers. But pneumonia, tuberculosis, all sorts of things people die from every year. There's risk out there. We used to pretend that was just that was living your life. We didn't lock down, wear masks, force people into quarantine. We just let people live their lives. And now we're in a position where we're dealing with another thing like that that's not seemingly, based on their data, less risk than the flu for the vast majority of people. Unless, of course, you have over 2.6 more comorbidities, and then you become the dangerous one. Remember, only 6% of all the deaths, according to the CDC, were people who only died with COVID. 94% had, on average, 2.6 other illnesses. That's ridiculous. So when I say you're not at risk, understand in the context of how we're saying that. But really, you have normal risk all the time. But COVID-19, according to their data, does not add more than the flu.
Is this true? We don't know. It's based on observational data. To know it's not true, we need a large trial that proves the vaccines reduce hospitalization more than they cause myocarditis in this age group.
Now, what's funny about that is this is the one we already told you about that shows a dramatic increase. But there's not just this one study. And I don't understand how these people cannot, like, we're seeing discussions about a new Israeli study and how this shows natural immunity and why it's not perfectly defined. So we don't know for sure. It's like, what are you talking about? I you can say we don't know for sure in any scientific study, but at the end of the day, we have the Lancet, we have the WHO, we have the NIH, we've got Nature, we've got Science Magazine. Every one of these have come out and said, absolutely, your natural immunity to COVID-19 is longer lasting, more robust, more durable, gives you T-cell, memory B, antibodies to 23 different variants of concern. And yet we're going to point to the newest one and be like, well, this one's not, it shows kind of, we're not sure. Do they not know about all the rest of them? Same point here. There's a lot of other studies, peer-reviewed and some not, about myocarditis that have happened long before August 30th that say the same thing, that there's an obvious risk. I showed you this one from I think it was the American Pediatrics. I mean, I could go on forever, but I just don't understand how even these people that are arguing sort of on the side of what we're saying are acting like we need, we don't know. We need more. We always need more research. But if you laid out what I've been laying out on this spot right here, there wouldn't be a question. This is clear. This increased your risk.
Next slide, please. The former FDA commissioner said the original premise of the vaccine was to reduce death and hospitalizations. And that was the data that came out of the initial clinical trials. Except, as you all know very well, and unfortunately, so did my nurse, the initial clinical trials did not find a reduction in death or hospitalization.
Now, did you hear that? Again, one of the things that we've said a lot that gets called fake news, which is these studies. And again, Forbes wrote this article in the middle of 2020 because they looked right at what Pfizer wrote on their studies. And none of the rest were, I guess, brave enough to talk about the truth in that regard. The article's still there. I pointed out many times. And by the way, the Pfizer data and the Moderna data are still there, which back up what they're saying. They did not even see, all they found was a reduction in mild to moderate symptoms. This is the only thing. And we see that in the real world data, despite how they talk about stopping infection, which doesn't mean stop transmission, but they hope you think that. How does it stop infection if you're still getting sick and you still have symptoms and you can still open in the hospital, but it's not as much, even though that's not the case, as we've already shown you, because as he's about to say again, they did not find that it reduced disease, severe death or hospitalization. They just didn't. They weren't even trying to find that, as they admitted themselves. We pointed it back in 2020.
Because they were inadequately powered. Yet the former commissioner is correct that the initial trials should have been powered to find a reduction in hospitalization.
Exactly.
Next
should have.
Slide, please.
Should have and wasn't.
We need your help on the front lines to stop vaccine hesitancy. Demand the booster trials are large enough to find a reduction in hospitalization. Without this data, we, the medical establishment, cannot confidently call out anti-COVID vaccine activists who publicly claim the vaccines harm more than they save especially in the young and healthy. The fact that we do not have the clinical evidence to say these activists are wrong should terrify us all. Thank you.
I mean, think about what he just said. And what's even crazier, I almost kind of feel like the way he's doing this is that he's doing it in a way that doesn't make him look like he's the crazy one, but yet he's on your side and we need to stop vaccine hesitancy, but he's kind of like in a very sneaky way pointing out what we're talking about. That maybe that's what he's doing there. Either way, let's just take him at face value. It's weird to me that he ends by saying, we need to do the studies we don't have to be able to disprove what they're saying based on the evidence we do have. Right. That's what he's saying. So the evidence that's currently there, we're pointing at and going, look, it shows you an increased risk, but you can't prove that there's the benefits outweigh that risk. And he's saying what we need is more research to be able to prove that so we can shout them down. Okay. How do you know that's the truth if you don't have that research? I mean, this is ridiculous where we are today. If you don't know, then you don't know and you can't assume that's what you'll find. But if you seek that out as your end goal, how much you want to bet that's what they find?
Next slide.
Next one. Now, this last one is the important one, in my opinion.
Thank you, Dr. Freeman.
They're all important, but this
next speaker is Mr. Steve Kirsch.
I'm Steve Kirsch. I'm executive director of the COVID-19 Early Treatment Fund. I have no conflicts. Advance to slide number 4 with the elephant.
What's interesting to me is the executive director of this fund, you know, so this is somebody who's working with the government, right? The U.S. or Biden's administration about the, I guess, the illusion of helping you out when you're in a bad situation. But what's interesting is that this person is, you wouldn't expect this, in my opinion. And this just speaks to the divided nature of even their internal circle, right? Now, I wouldn't necessarily say that he's on the internal circle, but just the mainstream discussion. These aren't people over on the fringe corner over here. You know, it's like you're going back to the very beginning. It's all Mikovits and Buttar and these fake news people. You know, they were the people that were brave enough to speak out right in the beginning. There is a waterfall of experts out there, PhDs and Nobel laureates they just don't like to talk about that are telling you the truth.
I'm going to focus my remarks today on the elephant in the room that nobody likes to talk about, that the vaccines kill more people than they save. Today, we focus almost exclusively on COVID death saves and vaccine efficacy because we were led to believe that the vaccines are perfectly safe. But this is simply not true. For example, there were 4 times as many heart attacks in the treatment group in the Pfizer 6-month trial report. That wasn't bad luck. Theirs shows heart attacks happen 71 times more often following these vaccines compared to any other vaccine.
71
in all,
times.
20 people died who got the drug, 14 died who got the placebo. Few people notice that. If the net all-cause mortality from the vaccines is negative, vaccines, boosters, and mandates are all nonsensical. This is the case today. Death rates.
And again, the real point to take away from that, listen to this again once we're done, but he is using the data. This is the same thing I'm doing. Now, it doesn't even mean you have to believe that they're telling you the truth or believe that that is the whatever. You look at the data they're giving you as the fact, and for the sake of conversation, you assume it is the fact, and then you use that data to prove that they're lying to you. How do you walk away from that? This is what we do every day on the show.
Slide number 7, advance to the number 7 in lower part. This shows that the all-cause death light rate in 3 cases. Only the VAERS numbers are statistically significant, but the other numbers are troubling. Even if the vaccines had 100% protection, it still means we kill 2 people to save 1 life. 4 experts did analyses using completely different non-US data sources, and all of them came up with approximately the same number of excess vaccine-related deaths, about 411 deaths per million doses.
Now, what's really interesting about this, I'm glad he said this, this crossover, this is what nobody's trying to do right now, will never want to do in the mainstream discussion, is compare what's happening here to other places with the same problem. Like they keep going, well, it's all the unvaccinated. Like, okay, whether you removing their narrative for the conversation, what are we seeing? At least what they're telling us is happening. We're seeing an increased hospitalization. That's what they're telling us. We're seeing an increase of cases. We're all pulling our hair out now because, oh, it's getting so much worse. And they tell you it's because the unvaccinated. That's their narrative. And you know, even if that's the case, the point is we're seeing an increase in the problem, right? Now, what's interesting is you can look at the other data from other locations that they're doing the same thing. Israel, right? And what's interesting is you see the exact same thing. The injection begins and you see an increase in the problem. Now, you can't just continue to ignore these correlations. As I always say, it's not proof, but it does mean something. Now, the fact that you can see the same thing happening in multiple locations in the same situation tells you something.
That translates into 150,000 people have died. Next slide would be slide number 11, the nursing home. Now, the real numbers confirm that we kill more than we save. And I would love everyone to look at the Israel Ministry of Health data on the 90-plus-year-olds, where we went from a 94.4% vaccinated group to 82.9% vaccinated in the last 4 months. In the most optimistic scenario, it means that 50% of the vaccinated people died and 0% of unvaccinated people died. Unless you can explain that to the American public, you cannot approve the boosters. Slide number 16, please. Myocarditis. The paper just posted yesterday on MedArchive entitled mRNA COVID-19 Vaccination and Development of CMR Confirmed Myopericarditis shows that the myopericarditis risk was 1 in 1,000. And that's an overall age range from 18 to 65, mean age of 33. It is not inconsistent with what the bear shows. Next slide would be slide number 18.
And the other thing that he kind of just briefly said there is, you know, the myocarditis risk is shown to not just be kids, right? I mean, the risk is outrageous all the way up to 40, 50. And it's more, at the very least, it's more than your normal risk. So as we point to the Oxford calculator yet again and show that your risk, even as a 40-year-old male or woman who have no comorbidities, you know, and again, you get higher up in that number, you're talking about the majority of the population. You do not have a risk. It is statistically insignificant, especially in compared to what you're increasing. And that's just myocarditis. Add on everything else, right? As I said before, how many rare, uncommon problems can you put in a large pile before it becomes no longer rare and uncommon?
Gaming of the trial. It's pretty clear that the Pfizer trial results were gamed. It's statistically impossible for protocol violations to be 5 times higher in the treatment group. Why hasn't this been investigated? Slide number.
So that, I mean, he's flying through these things, but he's catching these people in, as he's putting it, gaming the trials, manipulating things based on what they're doing here. Ultimately is what we talked about a second ago, whether you want to call it P hacking or something else. These are things that the mainstream will ignore because if you don't want to point out that the study that you like says, you know, that they're faulty actions, but that only people like this are willing to point out. And then if they do, they get dismissed as fake news.
19. Maddie DeGray was 12 when she enrolled in the Pfizer phase 3 trial for kids. Now she's paralyzed for life.
We already showed you this clip. That girl was in a trial. She was one of the people that got tested on, which, by the way, you're all still being tested on, but she was one of the ones that got told she was tested on. And she is still paralyzed. And guess what? They have never gotten back to her mother. She testified about this in public. She said, look, I reached out. I was lied to. I didn't know the risk. They didn't inform me of the risk. I did not get informed consent. And now she's struggling for the rest of her life. She's paralyzed. And I reached out. I sent it to Bayer's. Nobody got back. We have not spoken to her. Yeah, maybe that's the only one they haven't researched and the rest have been Bayer. No, they have not investigated the problems because they do not have the resources. And I've proven that to you on the show at least 3 different ways. It's crazy.
It wasn't reported by it in the Pfizer results. I told Janet Woodcock there was no investigation. Please tell us why this fraud was not investigated.
Exactly.
And finally, slide number 20, please. Early treatments are a much better alternative to boosters. The proof is that in Israel, cases are at an all-time high. In India, Uttar Pradesh is now COVID-19 free as of today. Almost nobody there is vaccinated. Thank you.
Now, you want to know why specifically I think that is? Just a heads up today, guys. I didn't tell you in the beginning. I'm having a really tough time with my back today, so I might have to be cutting the show short a little bit today. But on the note of what he's talking about right here, I want to point something out about what we've already discussed a few times in regard to. Let me find it really quickly. In regard to ivermectin. Now, there's a few discussions here. Now, it's not only ivermectin is the point here, but this is they've already tried to dismiss this from a lot of different places, India being one of them. And here's that first. This is the Times of India. Yes, it was only in Goa. Not that means it's not valid. That's what they say. Oh, no, that's only in one location. It's fake news. Well, as even Times of India is reporting, ivermectin, doxycycline, zinc are giving are now being given out in Goa to people's homes. Now on top of that, we're talking about, I'll get to that in a minute, I think. Here is the same thing happening in El Salvador. There's the package information, but here it says, look at what the government of El Salvador is giving out. Ivermectin, COVID-19 packets. It has Tylenol, which I don't know why you give that out, vitamin C, vitamin D3, zinc, aspirin, and ivermectin. But is it horse paste? No, it's not. It's the same thing they've been prescribing, the same thing your government is giving to Afghan refugees or Middle Eastern refugees, which it still says in the CDC website. Are they giving them horse paste? Obviously not. So this is a coordinated misinformation campaign like damn near everything else we're talking about. It's just so frustrating, isn't it? And that's what that doctor was trying to tell you about. But there's a lot more in here that you should take the time to listen to. But continuing forward, I want to talk about something that was sent to me from the Doctors for COVID Ethics, a group that if you're not familiar with, I highly recommend you follow, look into. Taylor Hudak is constantly interviewing people from this group because they're a very strong collection of highly credentialed experts that are willing to take a stand and speak out. Now, just because people are saying things that the mainstream doesn't like, supposedly, if you listen to the certain people, this group has been debunked. Right. This multifaceted group of all sorts of different people from all sorts of walks of life, scientists, doctors, they're all just debunked as one. They're debunked because that's really intelligent. Right. And by the way, individually, their entire lifetime of careers and all debunked, just not true. All of it because of what they said here. And then the fact checker said so. It's just ridiculous. I mean, that is juvenile, as naive to say something like that. And it's all over the place today. The point is, if you look at the data, not what the person said and not what the fact checkers say the person's not supposed to be listened to, who cares who says it? Again, a child in the corner could hand you something. And if you do your due diligence and it turns out to be factually correct, who cares? Doesn't matter. What they're showing you here, and I'm only saying that because of how many people have been told not to listen to this group, which blows me away because of how highly credentialed they truly are. The dangers of booster shots and COVID-19 vaccines, boosting blood clots and leaky vessels. Now, this is the article that has the link to the study or the overall, the compilation of information that I'll include, so you can look at that. I have downloaded the document, as I tend to do, to my server, just in case something happens. We also have it here for you to look at. Now, I just want to read for you the summary. And there's not that much more, but I recommend you read the whole thing because it's actually really crazy. And to get into the detailed version of what this summary is overviewing for you, but it's stuff that we've already talked about. As it says, the dangers of COVID-19 booster shots and vaccines, boosting blood clots and leaky vessels. It says, are COVID booster shots and vaccines safe and necessary? New discoveries in SARS-CoV-2 immunity and vaccine immune interactions. It says, by now, most people have heard that COVID-19 vaccines can cause blood clotting and bleeding, which I would like to believe, but sadly, it doesn't seem like a lot of people are even paying attention to verifiable problems they've admitted, which blows me away. You can go on Twitter and talk about blood clotting, and some people will call you fake news. It's incredible. But it says some readers may even be aware that reports of death following COVID-19 vaccination outnumber those for all vaccines combined since records began 31 years ago on the official VAERS database, which we just showed you. With many patients now having received their first and second doses of COVID-19 injections, additional booster shots are being rolled out in many countries. Biden's trying to do it here. Given that no clinical trials have been performed on more than two injections of any vaccine, it's important that doctors and patients understand how the vaccines interact with the immune system and the implications for booster shots. Now, this actually kind of floored me for a second that I didn't even think about this. This is an outstanding point. How in the world are we pretending that this is now going to be used or emergency? They didn't do any trials on this. No clinical trials have been performed on more than two injections, right? So right now what they're doing is they've done studies, rapid things on boosters, but that's one study. It's the same version of the same thing they gave you the first time, just in a booster. It's the same thing. So what they haven't studied is one, two, and then three. They've studied two. They've studied one, which they do quickly and said, okay, booster, good. Hot flash in the pan research, or if that's even what happened, as we've caught them in lies many times. Remember Pfizer with their 4 billion plus criminal track record, where they've been caught lying about safety results, caught lying about what it can do, caught lying about all sorts of terrible things, caught for people dying. They just paid $2 billion out on some huge thing like months ago. Who cares? Let's trust them on what they say. But the point being, if they have not done clinical trials on more than two injections, how in the world can they pretend that they can give these to you and based on the data from something they don't have? It says, so far, doctors and patients confronted with information on COVID vaccine side effects are typically reassured that the benefits of COVID-19 vaccination outweigh the risks. Governments, the pharmaceutical industry, regulators, and the media advise populations that the majority of adverse events are mild and transient, with serious complications in only a small minority of vaccine recipients. That's what we're being told. Most patients, however, aren't aware that among relevant scientific experts, such a view is not so readily shared, right? So what you're hearing is the media and the government representing, they say, the expert, the consensus, which at the end of the day really only means the experts they deem experts and what they collectively agree is what's supposed to be the truth. Not that they know it. That's a consensus. Consensus doesn't mean that they've proven it, right? Regardless of that, that's not the truth. There's a huge, in my opinion, probably far more, I say probably because I can't verify it based on I don't know how many experts there are in the world. I don't even know how you'd prove that. But there is a hell of a lot of people on the side of what we're talking about. Simply just choice and transparency that are speaking out constantly. Many are unaware that among relevant scientific experts, such a view is not readily shared. Eminent independent scientists and researchers in the fields of immunology and microbiology have been writing to medical regulators since early 2021. Oh, and by the way, I meant to show you this first. You can see the numbers there. Everything in this document, of course, as always on the side of what we're doing, is documented. Look at it for yourself. Not just theirs, but everything they're citing, everything. There are 39 citations in here of to peer-reviewed scientific research, to all sorts of things proving everything they're saying, or rather just referencing the data that backs up what they're saying. You don't see that in the other way, right? Now, continuing forward, it says, regulators since 2021 warning of vaccine-related blood clotting and bleeding, including that the official data on blood abnormalities post-vaccination likely represent just the tip of the iceberg, which, by the way, all the experts back up, whether we're talking about blood clots or not. It's less than 1% of what we're being told. Those scientists' warnings predated vaccine suspensions around the world. Remember, they were saying this before they started admitting that this was happening. They were saying this back when they were going, you're a crazy lunatic and that's fake news. Oh, remember, he's been debunked, but now he's been vindicated. Oh, but he's still debunked, though, even though he's been proven to be correct. Oh, but he said this when he was 13, so he's fake news, right? This is the absurdity of what's happening today. People like Dr. Bakhti, Dr. Yeadon, James Lyons-Weiler, PhD, and plenty of others we've discussed have continued to come out and shown you the data and saying that this is just the tip of the iceberg. And they were censored, ridiculed. They have admitted that blood clots are happening. Just look up VITT, vaccine-induced thrombosis thrombocytopenia, as one of the variations of what we're talking about. It says the warnings were based on established immunological science applied to the novel mechanism of action of the gene-based COVID-19 vaccines. Now, more than 6 months later, new discoveries in the immunology of SARS-CoV-2 have caught up with the rushed vaccination schedule, right? They rushed this out as fast as possible, and then now the scientific studies are catching up with what's going on, confirming and extending the experts' prior warnings. The good news is that we are more comprehensively protected against COVID-19 by our own pre-existing immunity than was previously understood. Exactly, and that's backed up by all the peer-reviewed research, as I've shown you 100 times. But catch what he says right there. Doesn't say backed up by your immunity, natural or otherwise, but backed up by your own pre-existing immunity. Now, I'm not sure if they necessarily meant that as just pre-existing because you had been infected before, or if he is citing what I keep pointing out, both from, I always forget the name of this outlet. It comes up when I just put in the letter J, so I'm going to grab it real quick. This one, as well as The Lancet and the Journal of Infectious Medicine, I keep doing that, Infectious Disease, make clear points. Oh, and Nature, by the way, made the same point that you have. They show a majority of uninfected adults, uninfected, meaning that they haven't come in contact with COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2, and they nonetheless show pre-existing antibodies. They get into the study about colds and SARS and different things from before, or just a bunch of other reasons. And that's what I think he might be pointing to. I think I grabbed this one too. Yeah. Here. And this is so, it's so telling, as they point out here, back on July 15th, right? But we're still not sure. We don't know. Now we don't know how long it lasts, despite all of the data from a year ago. SARS-CoV-2 specific T cell immunity in cases of COVID-19 and SARS and uninfected controls. So whether or not you're infected, or maybe you had SARS, maybe you had the common cold, or maybe none of that, you still show T cell immunity against SARS-CoV-2. How will you explain that? And you get into this discussion down here, and you can see that they found CD4, CD8 T cells. I mean, it's across the board. You can see, and I get caught on this topic because it's so ridiculous, how they're pretending this doesn't exist. But here, back to this, your own pre-existing immunity is way better than what we're talking about today. On the other hand, it says this pre-existing immunity aggravates the risk that COVID-19 vaccines will induce blood clotting, because that's what the scientific research shows, and or leaky blood vessels. Meaning you have, this speaks to the idea of natural immunity, right? And then get the injection that leads to your problems. That's what the scientific research has backed up. This risk must be expected to escalate with each revaccination. Vaccine-induced harm to our blood vessels is unlikely to be rare. Now, one thing to point out here is that we're talking about all sorts of different scientific studies on, this is like The Lancet, Nature Scientific Magazine. You know, these are the supposed to be the highly regarded publications out there. And then the CDC does its own study that says, well, look at that. If you get this, it increases your safety, possibly. And I'm not even kidding. And then all the media parrots that, and that's what becomes the narrative for the next 6 months, that if you get the injection on top of natural immunity, well, it likely increases your... No, it doesn't. They themselves said likely, and you look into the study and you find that it's very unsubstantiated. And all the rest of the peer-reviewed studies have said the same thing, that there's clearly, in fact, a 2.4 increased risk of adverse events. Going forward, perhaps the most pertinent finding is that due to the discovery of a widespread memory-type antibody response to SARS-CoV-2, the antibodies induced by the COVID-19 vaccine can be expected to activate the so-called complement system. This is really important. This is after you get the injection following a natural immunity. This can bring about the destruction of any cell that manufactures the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein, particularly in the circulation. Now, what that means is that if you're being instructed via nanolipid particle mRNA instructions, rather the lipid nanoparticles encapsulating the mRNA instructions that then produce the spike protein, or trains your, teaches your body how to, and your body then gets trained to destroy anything that does that, well, what does that sound like? It sounds like your body begins to attack itself. If that happens to the endothelia, that is, the cell layer that lines the inner surface of our blood vessels, then those vessels may begin to leak and clots will form. Given the 2021 research showed the spike protein to enter the bloodstream shortly after vaccination, which, let's see, number five, I believe that's the one I don't want to scroll down. I've shown you this study many times. The one that talks about 11 and 13, I just showed it in my last show. 11 of 13 people were shown that the spike protein was circulating in their blood plasma as soon as one day after the injection, despite the fact they tell you that it's right in your arm and that's the only place it goes. They cite it right here. The clots will form. Says, given that the research showed the spike protein enters your bloodstream shortly after vaccination, this dangerous endothelial involvement in spike production is highly likely and should be expected to occur, right? This is according to all these experts, all these doctors and scientists, right? What's the argument? They're all a bunch of anti-science conspiracy theorists, fringe maniacs. All of them, the hundreds of people in this group, or that they're just showing you science they don't want you to see. Just think for yourself. That's all I ask. Read it. Look at the source material. Recognize these aren't debunked fringe weirdos that don't believe in the scientific method as they're using science to prove their point. Just think. Be objective. As stark as these as medical realities may be, the silver lining is that the same antibody profile, along with previously documented T-cell immunity, protects around 99% of the population against life-threatening SARS-CoV-2 infections. 99%. Now, somebody out there may be saying, that's fake news. There's no way that this, you know, that can't be true because all the people are dying and everything. Oh my, we've seen it all, right? Well, don't challenge the WHO guidelines, right? Isn't that what we're supposed to say? Here's the WHO right here, COVID-19 natural immunity. Within 4 weeks following infection, 90 to 99% of individuals show detectable neutralizing antibodies. Okay, back to the point. 99%. Here's this fake news person citing a fact directly from the WHO, but it's fake news though, right? This ties in with the known fact. So taking that in consideration, that 99% of people have lasting, durable, all, from multiple different angles, immunity against what they're telling you is happening, including, by the way, including the variants of concern. Just concludes, as I'm mentioning it, here's the study from Science from very recently, August 13th, as it says very clearly, that the study identified four antibodies from early outbreak people that got sick early on before and don't have an injection that are potent against 23 variants, including variants of concern. Right. So all that said and done, you're safe against all these things, 99% against being sick, including the variants of concern, while we're watching these variants being shown to be vaccine resistant. Combine that with the fact, the known fact, that over 99% of people are simply safe from death with COVID-19. That's from the Oxford calculator. That's from the 113 plus infection fatality rate meta-analysis that showed you, 113 plus studies that showed you that you're not at risk. That 99.98%, most people do not have that risk. You combine that with the fact that on top of that 99% of those people that would have got, it's just ridiculous. It shows you that you are simply not at risk the way they're telling you that you are. The implications for doctors and patients are that, number one, vaccination against COVID-19 is unnecessary, period. Populations are protected by their immune systems against COVID-19. Most of them, you understand that's 99%. That includes people that are over 70, over 60 with comorbidities. A lot of these people also have natural immunity, but when they were forced to get the injection because they're the dangerous ones, over 60s, it hurt them. And we dramatically saw that in New York and a lot of other places where they just killed them all off, whether they meant to or not. That was very clear. The nursing home epidemic, you know, the problem that we all saw that was kind of quietly shoved away, even though we're all calling them out for it after the fact. That's what happened, guys, in my opinion, based on the science. Populations are protected by their immune systems against COVID-19. This applies to SARS-CoV-2 in all its variants. All its variants. That's what the science is backing up. Booster shots are uniquely dangerous in a way that is unprecedented in the history of vaccines. This is because repeatedly boosting the immune response will repeatedly boost the intensity of self-to-self attack. An important consideration for patients is that those who have already been vaccinated against COVID-19 and whose health remains intact, so you're healthy, can protect themselves against serious harm by stopping now. Don't take anything else. For a detailed explanation of the science behind these injections, read the rest of this. And even more so, if you haven't gotten any of it and you're healthy, stay that way. That's my opinion. I'm not a doctor. These people are, though, doctors for COVID ethics. Now, keeping this in mind, all this information and how they are trying to put this in front of you while the mainstream doesn't want to talk about it, here's a good example that I referenced earlier from the Telegraph, from the 17th. Why didn't doctors listen to women about link between COVID vaccines and periods? Isn't this crazy? Like, I actually just had this conversation. I just talked about this on my last show. How the, this is all about the shedding, right? And how people like Mr. Z-Dog, MD, whatever his name is over there saying, oh, well, that's fake news because that's not possible. Oh, well, and just to be clear, he's talking about the shedding concept and how that could affect this discussion. Now, if the data backs up that it can shed, which it does, and even the expert himself, one of the people involved with discovering this, spoke out on Twitter and said, yes, this can obviously shed. That's so we have established that the spike protein is capable of shedding. On top of the fact that it's even been shown that people who get the injection, by the way, in a different way, can still shed the virus, but that's two different things, but both of them are ridiculous. That's why they don't stop transmission. That's why this, none of this seems to do anything they say it does. But this is talking about, in my opinion, the shedding discussion and how people who are around other people who got the injection are suddenly having weird periods. Women, obviously. And then also people who got the injection are carrying on to have weird periods. Women. And nobody's talking about this. Not only is nobody talking about it, but as even the Telegram's pointing out, they're refusing to discuss it. How do you see this as anything other than willfully dishonest? It says a new study reveals that, oh, tell me I didn't. Okay, good. New study reveals that thousands of women experienced irregularities after their jab, yet the medical establishment seems disinterested, right? Just like I was saying before, it's fake news up until they're allowed to discuss it. All these people are crazy, lying, deceiving, anti-vaxxers, until they suddenly go, oh, the NIH found a small link, but it's super rare, and most of them probably aren't real. So you admitted that it's happening, though. Oh, okay, so they weren't lying then, right? But they were censored. It's just so stupid how this keeps going. This is September 17th. It says, when my period was late, this is the author, When my period was late last month, I was cautiously optimistic. And she gets into this discussion about, you know, this whole article ends up slanting in a way that it's like, they're doing this because it's about, they don't like women. And it's like, oh, come on. This is happening on every walk of life. There's even another article about somebody specifically. Oh, it was Candace Owens discussing one of these side effects from somebody. And it just bothers me that they try to, she slants it into about because he's black. It's like, come on. There are side effects in every possible ethnicity right now, ethnicity that are being completely disparaged and dismissed. And of course, we have to make it a racial issue, right? Because that works for their political side of what they're trying to achieve. But this is not just about women and women's rights. This is about the fact that they're ignoring side effects of this injection. And it says, regular as they almost always are, she's talking about her period, it's regular, and she thought that, you know, everything was probably okay, but she took a test, not pregnant. Took another test, not pregnant. She said she had her second dose of the vaccine months before. Could there be a connection? And she says, as the author, this possibility is looking increasingly likely. And do you not realize that's exactly what we are doing on this show? Saying, well, this does look very likely based on the data. All censored, fake news, dangerous. Now, here's the Telegraph, and I don't want the Telegraph to be censored. I don't think anybody should be censored, but the point is that it's allowed when the mainstream is allowed to say it. We just said this 2 days ago, and we're being censored for it. It's just, it's comical, at the very least. And it is looking very likely, and that's the point. And it's not just likely, it's backed up by Pfizer's own research from their clinical trials that they rushed through. It says, this week, a study in the British Medical Journal revealed that almost 35,000 British women have reported, and I already told you this, that following their injections against COVID, they've experienced more painful and more irregular periods. And a month later, went back to normal, in most cases. Dr. Victoria Mayle, a lecturer in reproductive immunology at Imperial College London, of all places, who led the work, said that all the main vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna, Oxford, AstraZeneca, were involved, but there has been no suggestion of long-term impact on fertility, except that the Pfizer study itself found that in two different ways. But we keep pretending that's not there. Remember, I've pointed this out before. They found about a 9.7% decrease in fertility in female rats that took the injection. And they say right underneath that, if it doesn't fall below 25% decrease, we don't think it's relevant for discussion. That should bother the hell out of you. Don't you think women would want to know about a 9% decrease in fertility? Yeah, I think they would. That's called informed consent. I've shown you the study myself. They even reference it, but say, but it's not statistically significant. Excuse me, statistically significant. Which, yeah, I love talking about that too, but 10% is pretty damn significant, I think, to women and in general. But it says, this study is not the first we've heard of period disruption being linked to the jab. Yeah, exactly, because they keep dismissing this stuff. Ever since the vaccine rollout began, women have been all over social media talking about how the vaccine seemed to have an impact on their menstrual cycles. But because it's on social media and it says what they don't like, well, of course it's bots and fake news. But when they go on social media and talk about all the great things that are happening after the injection, well, that's the right story. We'll talk about that. For most of these women, their vaccine shot was followed by a late period or a particularly heavy period. Other women experienced breakthrough bleeding. And this is where it gets into some of the problematic stuff, especially when you think about blood clotting and how this is affecting your blood and your internal system. When you bleed outside, by the way, not just blood clotting, but we've seen the platelets issue where people bleed out after getting the injection. But it says when you bleed inside of your period, that's called breakthrough bleeding. It says some women whose contraception meant that they had not had a period for years. Some people we have in our community who said that they've been on menopause, who suddenly had a period after their sibling got injected, after their husband got injected. And they weren't. And then they got it right afterward. This is all over the place. Hadn't had a period for years and suddenly had to rush out for tampons, whether they got injected or they were around somebody who got injected. It says all of these women came to social media for advice or reassurance. Some of them could have been lying. Of course, some of them were just going, what's going on? I don't know what's happening to me. And they got overwhelmingly attacked because you're creating vaccine hesitancy with your truthful story, whether you're even saying, I think it's vaccine related or not. Just coming out and saying, I got the injection. Now this is happening. What do you guys think? And they get attacked for it because the media and the government have made that they've sicked those people on anyone who says anything against the narrative. Some of them could be lying, but some of them are absolutely true based on what we're continuing to see them slowly admit now. It says there has been little to offer, highlighting how little anyone has thought to consider the chance of a connection, right? We won't even consider it because we were told it was fake news. But what the new study highlights is how little anyone has thought to even consider the chance of a connection so far. No one even cares. We're talking about the scientists, the government, the media. They don't care. When women first started reporting menstrual cycle irregularities following the vaccine, the lack of data on the issue led doctors to just dismiss their concerns. Now, read that sentence. The lack of data on the issue led doctors to dismiss their concerns. That's exactly what they're doing with VAERS. That's not the proper way to think. If you don't have data, that means you don't know. So your concerns are valid because we don't know. If just as likely it's happening as it's not. If you don't know, it's a flip of the coin, isn't it? You don't know. So lack of data means that you're dismissing things because you're told to dismiss them. That's politics, not science. It says, it's just a coincidence, we were told. Women often have irregular cycles every now and then. They're told by the media, told by the government. This attitude ignored, this kind of cracked me up, not only the fact that there has never been any serious research into how common it is for a woman to have irregular periods, to occasionally have an irregular period. Is that stupid? So here we are with the mainstream consensus going, oh, you women, that's normal, right? When they've never studied whether it's normal. Perfect. Just say whatever we want to say. We're right, so just trust us. But it says, but that also many of us women they're talking about in general have been tracking our cycles for years and know that a 20-day delayed period is not normal irregularity. Generally, they know, and it's pretty, a lot of people can be pretty regular. It says, well, okay, then the medical community proffered moving to the bargaining stage of denial. It's stress. Denial, meaning they're denying something that everybody sees is happening. Now, it's not just about irregular periods or just about women. It's about all of these factors. See that as the larger discussion. They did the same thing around blood clots. It was fake news until it wasn't. The same thing around Bell's palsy, fake news until it wasn't. Vaccine-induced thrombosis, thrombocytopenia was fake news until it wasn't. All of this stuff was fake news until it was shown to be the case, grudgingly and super rare. Myocarditis was a crazy story until it was verifiably happening. This is just, it's ridiculous. I say this so often, but I hear myself say these things. How are people still not seeing this? It blows me away. So this next part, you see, she kind of tries to slant this around. Well, it's kind of about women only. No, it's about all the things that are being reported, including the over 6,000 deaths in VAERS that are being dismissed as unverified, which they think means fake. Same things happening here. It says, this is not the first time a vaccine has been linked with menstrual cycle irregularities. So right there, you've got precedent. So it's happened before. And look, we're talking about other things that are viral vector, like Johnson & Johnson. And they're still dismissing it, even though there's a precedent. Does that seem honest to you? It says, Dr. Mayo, this is the woman speaking, has also noted that the human HPV virus has been associated with menstrual cycle changes. So multiple injections in the past have been associated with this problem. And here we are. And they go, yeah, fake news. We won't even consider this very concerning thing that's happened before. It says potential menstrual cycle effects from the rubella vaccine, now the third in this discussion, were in the 70s and 80s. Or rather, research was looking into it. And it says even as far back as 1913, let that sink in, a doctor was investigating the potential menstrual impact of typhoid vaccines. Yeah, no precedent at all, right? And literally back to like the beginning of this discussion. It says, but despite these historical data points, many doctors and researchers continue to dispute that there is any biological plausible mechanism by which the vaccines could affect the menstrual cycle. Now, there you could argue is a fair argument. We're not saying, no, it's not there. We don't see it. There's plenty of real world data, colloquial, you know, observational and otherwise. But to say that simply, well, we don't see biological plausibility, there's not a mechanism by which this could be happening, that's fair. Make the argument. But it says, in fact, there are several biological plausible mechanisms, according to this woman speaking on this. And I believe this was a, I'm not going to find it now. I was reading about the person earlier. Anyway, continue forward. It says, but we lack the research to prove the point either way. That's the ultimate reality. So it comes down to the fact that they're saying we don't know either way. And this is the same point. To say that there's no biological plausible mechanism. Is that because you've researched that and found that that doesn't exist? No, that's what she's saying right here. And you can read both the things they're linking to. They're saying that we don't know for sure. And that errs in the side of it doesn't exist. Are you beginning to see a pattern here? If you don't know and you haven't proven it, it could go either way. This is the kind of p-hacking thing. This is about slanting the findings in the direction of what you want it to go. Not finding a conclusion does not slant in either direction. It says part of the rush to dismiss women on the basis of little to no evidence comes, no doubt, from a well-meaning but ultimately misguided effort to reduce vaccine hesitancy. Yeah, don't try not to err on the side of your subjective, like, yeah, I'm sure, no doubt. No doubt well-meaning. Come on, really? I mean, what you're literally, what you just described undeniably points to, at some level, a willful dismissal. But yeah, no doubt well-meaning to dismiss your concerns. Come on. That's so you're not, you know, stepping on too many toes, but ultimately misguided effort to reduce vaccine. Exactly. So lying is more important. Hiding the truth is more important if that truth creates vaccine hesitancy. How many times have I told you that? This type of groupthink may also have contributed to the sidelining of women's specific health issues throughout the pandemic. Right, because that's all that's happened. The sidelining of just women's health issues, not children and elderly and everybody everywhere, right? Let's make this about only women and what they're dealing with, right? Come on. Not that that's not happening, but it's happening to everybody, guys. God, it's just so frustrating. I mean, maybe you could argue there's a bigger situation more specifically on women's issues. I don't see it. Everybody's rights are being ignored. Everybody's health issues are being ignored. It's not just one group, but that's what I think this is meant to kind of pull away from that all-encompassing illusion that we're seeing. But it says enough women have now reported menstrual cycle effects that the issue has become impossible to ignore, says the Telegraph. And it even says, guess what? As I just pointed out to make the same point and was censored for, the U.S. NIH has now allocated $1.67 million to research a possible link between COVID-19 vaccines and the menstrual cycle, as well as how long any impact might last, which means they don't know. To put this in context, the NIH has to date spent almost $4.9 billion on COVID-19 research. And here we are. Now it's okay to say this, right? It wasn't 2 days ago. Now it is. Or excuse me, 17, same day almost, but it's interesting. There's a problem here. It's been ignored this whole time. All the women screaming about it have been dismissed as fake news anti-vaxxers. And now they're slowly going, well, maybe. And then the NIH will finally come around some point quietly, wave on the back burner and say that, yeah, there's a link here, but we're not sure. It's very rare. Same as everything else. This is the one I was pointing out before. This is the D.D. Gregarious blames COVID-19 vaccine for his career worst season. Now, of course, this guy's being dismissed. Oh, fake news. How dare he say something like that? Same thing. He is experiencing this. He believes that after he got the injection, something changed in his body, specifically in his elbow, that caused this problem. And everyone attacks him. How dangerous. Dangerous misinformation. He should be held accountable. Well, did you prove he was wrong? How do you know he's wrong if you haven't proven that didn't happen to him? You see how ridiculous this is? He comes out and says something that challenges what's supposed to happen. He's all of a sudden a dangerous misinformer. This is the dangerous misinformation. And by the way, guys, this is happening to a lot of people. A lot of athletes specifically, you know, the ones dropping dead on the field or having heart attacks. I went 23 archers in the Olympics, you know, 23-year-old archers in the Olympics. Now, going forward, I think, guys, in the interest of my health here, I'm going to probably wrap this up. Let's see what I wanted to talk about. I was going to get into this. I'll save this for a later show, I think. Let me just try to run through this really quickly and not get into this stuff. Now, I'm going to try to, I'm going to play this at the end. Not this one, but the next one, my speech, part of it anyway, and let you hear that at the end. I was kind of going to run through it, and I'll try to include the links. I apologize for those that may be watching newly. I told people to tune in because I was going to go through and include these links so they can have them for themselves. I will circle back and include this, but so unfortunately, my back is kind of killing me today. So I just spoke at a rally yesterday in Franklin. This one, in fact, is the one. This is a highlight reel. Still haven't gotten the full one, but from the one I spoke at in May. Check it out. Some of the same people. You'll get about a 30-second clip of me talking about something back in May, which is exactly where we've come to today. And here's another one. This is the speech that I just randomly found this online. They even spelled my name right, which is fantastic. As somebody who was there who filmed it and unfortunately cut it off towards the end, you didn't get to see the full picture from the beginning. It cut off a little bit at the beginning. But this is a great speech that I mean, in my opinion, because I went through a lot of data that I really hope you will take in. Super important information. But I include in this show, yeah, this is the video you can see, a lot of the data that I spoke about, the WHO speaking out against what the CDC is doing. Well, interestingly enough, what HHS, you know, I've shown you this before. Oh, weird, the page is gone. I wonder why that page is gone. Oh, you know, by the way, even the archive today, I believe the entire web archive page is down right now. Let me just refresh and see if it come back up yet. Maybe it has. Looks like it's loading. In any case, I thought it was kind of funny that even that, okay, it is back now, but it was down earlier. But here's the web archive of it, and here's the, another web archive of it. Point being, here's the thing I listed in the speech, showing you that over 62,000 people were supposedly killed from the flu and pneumonia in 2001, 61,777 of which were attributed to pneumonia, 257 of which were to the flu alone. And in only 18 cases was flu virus positively identified. This is what's happening today, combining pneumonia, influenza, with COVID-19. Here's the BMJ saying the same thing, exaggerating flu mortality again. Why can't they be trusted? That's in 2018. Here's the epidemic that wasn't, the whooping cough epidemic that was brought on by the PCR test, which they admit to in this article. And by the way, here's what's ridiculous, by the way. This wasn't paywalled. Here, oops, oh, don't freeze on me. Well, maybe it's a good time for it to freeze on me. Okay, good. So here's the web archive version. This article's from 2007, right? This they don't paywall things from 2007, but we talked about this for like a week straight, and then what do you know? The New York Times puts a paywall on the article. How funny is that? That's ridiculous. They know what we're looking at, guys. But here is the Reuters article, quoting what Kerry Mullis said, even though the title still says fact check, didn't use it for, but then it says right here, correction. The verdict of this fact check has been changed from false to misleading. Oh, you're retracting it? No, we're just changing what we said. Yeah, they're retracting it. It's what happened. They are misleading you. They're saying it's misleading because the person on the Facebook post they're pointing to says something that's slightly incorrect, even though none of us are saying that. And the truth is that what he said is accurately being pointed to the PCR test. Yes, he was talking about HIV, but what he meant is it doesn't work. The main point here, the test, the PCR test, can detect genetic sequences of viruses, but not viruses themselves. By its very nature, is unsuited for estimating numbers. It's a yes or no answer, guys, and that's how they're using it against you. All these links, by the way, I'll include. This is the discussion we had at the speech and a great video from Star that I'm going to include. We were going to talk about this later. I'm going to save this for the next show, guys. There's good stuff in here we'll get into in regard to the PCR test. Thank you, Coronavirus Plushie, for sharing this. Some really important information. I'll go on to this next. I did say I would talk about this in the show, so let's end with this. This is the Pfizer transcript with Bank of America Global Healthcare. Woo, yeah, because that's they're looking out for your health, clearly. September 15th, 2021. Some interesting things it says here. First of all, it goes on to talk about what they're doing in regard to other types of new things they're making. I just want to point out, it says we're supposedly supporting all of this by making sure that we have the right manufacturing capabilities to be able to supply, right, and be able to commercialize this if successful. So we have three gene therapy sites that we have already been set up and they have the capabilities to be able to scale up to provide these therapies. Now, not just injections or certain styles, but sites, entire gene therapy sites for new things, not COVID-19 specifically, but we need to remember that this is gene therapy. They called it that before this started. And they're building, this is what the entire next generation of these mRNA platform type, whether viral vector or not, based on this style of new nanoparticle-based medicine. Remember, they told you this back in 2002? We will alter human evolution with nanotechnology in 20 years. And of course, nanotechnology doesn't have to mean robots. It could just mean nanoparticles and things are using like nanolipid particles, but it can also mean things that they definitely have technology for, regardless of how you think they're applying it. Regardless of that, that's what's happening today. And it's not your choice. They're doing this whether you like it or not. Now, here's another really alarming one. It says, yes, this is transcripts of their meeting. So as you know, let me get the highlighting here. As you know, we are intensely focused on ensuring that we can support broad populations of people because that indeed is the way to end the pandemic, which is our goal, right? Again, showing you that they're talking, by the way, not a single mention in this entire long transcript of adverse events, side effects, problems. Who cares about that stuff? All we're talking about is broad populations of people, right? Are they at risk? Who cares? Vaccinate everyone possible. That's the goal, right? Exactly. It says, and so that's why these additional populations and the studies that we have done are so very important to us. I think that Pfizer has also been unique in the fact that our program is the only one that's currently extending to younger groups. Who could have guessed? Oh yeah, me. That's right. That Pfizer would be the one way back in the beginning. And it says, and so with that, you know that we have had the 12 to 15 approved earlier this summer. Oh, really? 12 to 15 approved earlier this summer? So either Pfizer doesn't know what they're talking about, or they're lying, or they were approved and we didn't know it earlier this summer for a group that's currently, as we're supposed to be told, not approved, except it's emergency authorized, 12 to 15. Isn't that interesting? But going forward, it says, and right now we are amassing data for 5 to 11 year olds. Oops, as we just told you, 5 to 11. That's happening right now, as well as 6-month-year-olds to 11-year-olds. It says, and we expect to submit the data at the end of the month, actually, to the FDA and to begin our discussions for an emergency use authorization there. Really? How can you even justify an emergency authorization for something else while you're approving things over here? Or the fact that you can still pretend we're in an emergency? That's not happening. These kids are at zero risk, and you're going to pretend they're in an emergency to the point that you have to justify giving them something that you haven't fully verified is safe, which is what that means? It says, following that, we are also going to be submitting our data for under 5-year-olds. We told you. And that submission will follow that. It says, and then in addition, and in parallel, we're also studying data in understanding the vaccine and immune levels in pregnant women. While they're giving it to them, mind you, as I've shown you before, Pfizer documentation, FDA documentation right now says we do not know the risks. We have not studied if this is safe for pregnant women. Yet, Fauci says, well, they should get it. I just showed you on his last document, on his last little spiel on the FDA thing, they said pregnant women should get it. The benefits outweigh the risks is what he said. Except they said, we don't know. So how could he know? It's nefarious, in my opinion. And those data should be available by 2022. Oh, but that's right, because they're still being tested on. And then beyond that, we're always, I think, we're on high alert in terms of following and monitoring any of these variants. Right. So as you know, the reason we were able to have this booster data is because we have been following it. Right. Somehow they're managing to follow the variants, even though there's no way they could possibly know where they're coming from. Because even the CDC admitted all they do is sample areas and give you an estimate overview. So when you hear the hospital saying, we have 99% here in this hospital, they're lying to you. They're estimating and telling you that based on what they're being told to say. Goes on to say, but of course, all of our data will demonstrate the efficacy and effectiveness of our current vaccine against adult. Nope, not true. In fact, it literally shows the opposite. Somebody put a peer-reviewed study in front of me that says that's the case, and I will talk about it. It does not say that. I've shown you the peer-reviewed research coming out. It shows you more than anything else that Delta, Lambda, Mu, these are vaccine resistant. Going forward, it says, but of course, you know that we always have to be on the lookout for new mutations and new variants. And so I'm also rest assured that if at some point we need a new vaccine, and you know they've already said they're talking about that. Israel already admitted that. It says that's also something that we've thought about. Shocking, I know. Planned for, shocking, I know. And we can do in short order. It says, in fact, with an mRNA technology, gee, I wonder which way that's going to go, you can produce a new vaccine in 110 days, right? That's Pfizer talking. In fact, not just Pfizer, that is the group president of Pfizer Biopharmaceutical Group for Pfizer Inc. They can make a new one based on a variant in 110 days. Now, do you believe they can fully safety test that in 110 days? Yeah, obviously not, because they're not doing that. They've already admitted that they don't have to. So we're sort of thinking about the current vaccine and its forms, different formulations, different pack sizes, different populations and ages, as we've just discussed, but it's also keeping an eye out for an event that we need a whole new vaccine, what we would do. Gee, I wonder what they would do. They just told you what they would do. That's the plan, guys. Why you think they're looking at different pack sizes, populations and ages? They're going to make this is going to be a vaccine size. This is a profit motive at the end of the day. However you want to see this going, I could estimate all day long, but 110 days, it's alarming. Now we'll talk about this. There is some good stuff happening, guys. Just as I clicked on it, 11 of 15 New York City restaurants are not enforcing vaccine mandates. There's a lot of positive things happening as well. In the NBA, players are not required to get COVID-19 vaccine now, which is really telling to me. But what's interesting is they're also saying that, well, they put a memo out that says all of the coaches, social media producers, frontline members in the office and must be fully vaccinated. They also reached out and said that the referees must be fully vaccinated. But weirdly enough, none of the elite NBA players have to be injected. Isn't that weird? Well, it's a good thing regardless, but it's weird how they're making this happen. It's sort of like seeing Pelosi and AOC and these different people in their gowns and, you know, gallivanting around their events with no masks on while everybody around them is working with masks on. The CDC, I'm not saying anybody should. The CDC says that everybody should, and yet they're the ones that aren't. How do you make sense of that? We're being deceived. Now, I'm glad I just remembered that, so I am going to end today. I apologize for cutting it short today, guys. I'm just having a hard time here, but I'm going to end with this clip because this is a really important clip. I make sure I have it downloaded, actually. Actually, what I think I can do here is play the end I have clipped as well. But take a listen to this. This is about the illusion and how that illusion is being used to remove your freedom. And I'm going to include the links that I can here that associate with this discussion. But I've talked about all of this before in a lot of different ways. So help me continue to share this information. Get it in front of new people. Keep fighting. Please don't stop, because now has never been, it's never been more important than right now to take a stand. From your job, your family. And I'm not saying divide. I'm not saying fight. I'm saying take a stand. Now, like I've said before, especially with your family, the last thing you want to do is push them away, ostracize yourself, or create division there. Bring the information, have a cordial discussion, and the moment it gets heated, stop, back away. Be like, okay, that's fine. I'll leave it alone. You know, it's okay. Agree, disagree. Even though it's the last thing they'll want to do, because you're an evil terrorist, villain, anti-vaxxer, you know, maniac, if you're over here thinking the opposite, even though you're going, we should all have a choice. But you're the crazy one, right? But circle back later and water that seed you planted. And they start yelling, back away, back away. Circle back later, water it again. Here's a new study. Did you see that new study? Okay, okay. Eventually, hopefully, and it's worked for me in plenty of other ways in my life, it will make a difference. Just got to keep trying. So thank you for being here, guys. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Listed off. Lasting.
Oop, that was the wrong one. That was the last one. It cuts off. You'll see. You'll miss a little part of it. Eventually, I'll get the full clip, but I will send it out when I get it. So enjoy this.
Driven by a desire for accuracy, chef and independent news stalwart Ryan Christian has a passion for the truth. As a recent recipient of the Serena Shim Award for Uncompromising Integrity in Journalism, he understands that Americans want their news to be transparent, don't we all? Devoid of the opulence frothed out by today's corporate media. Ryan's unjaded approach offers common sense to the individual racked by the ambiguous news cycle. Avid writer and editor by day, truth seeker by night, Ryan's reality defines what it means to be current. Is Ryan here? Ryan, all right. Thank you, man. Thank you, everyone. Well, first off, let's give a big shout out for everybody that spoke so far. We've had some great people here today. Come on, guys, get involved. Clap for everybody that's speaking their heart out here today. The point the last speaker just made, it's important right now that everybody walking by, everybody around here, hears your passion for what we're talking about today. Okay, so whether it's me or somebody else, give me a high five. High five. Yes. So make sure that if I say something you agree with, just clap. Speak out. Yell. Let everybody know that we're here to speak out about what we're talking about today as well. Everybody else is going to be speaking. So today, it's all about freedom. That's the point of why we're here today. The World Freedom Rally. But what's important to understand, and I agree with what Starbuck had to say in regard to how there's multiple ways to fight this. We can't just try to show them the facts. We need to fight this in other ways. But what's important to understand and why I'm here today is to help you arm yourselves with the tools to be able to have this conversation in an intelligent way. Because the truth is, we are being deceived. Period. This fear-based deception around your health, which is what it is being used to control your life and systematically remove freedom from your life. Regardless of your overall perspective, real or not, virus or not, what we are experiencing today is most certainly an illusion. And what I mean by saying that is it doesn't mean that that's completely not there or any variation thereof. It means there's 100 different ways that our government is lying to us about how this is going down. And the intention behind that is a secondary conversation. What's most important is that we're aware that we're being deceived. Now today, what my point of speaking today is to use the data that they have provided us. something that people watch my show know I say all the time, arguing from within their narrative. Doesn't always mean that we agree with what they're saying, but using their data, which is what I'm going to do today, I will go point by point and demonstrate just how clearly we are being lied to. Now, by the way, I have all the source material for every point that I'm talking about at the booth over here, so if you'd like to come join me afterwards, disagree, agree, want to learn more, come talk to me afterward. So, right out of the gate, there were three major mistakes, or so we're led to believe, that collectively led to the illusion of severity of what we're dealing with today. One, you probably all know, was Neil Ferguson and the Imperial College of London, creating his one of his many government agenda-supporting subjective models that falsely claimed the infection fatality rate was 3.6%. We all know that's not true. They've admitted that's not true, but that's what created it in the beginning. Now, then, as if to support this illusion, Fauci mistakenly, again, we're told, confused what's called infection fatality rate with case fatality rate, which, just to make it simple, is an easy way to over-exaggerate the problem. And later, he let it go unnoticed that even the correct usage of the infection fatality rate was using what's called relative risk reduction instead of absolute risk reduction. And for those that don't know these things, bottom line, it means it's a way to exaggerate what's really happening. And somebody like Fauci knows better than this. Now, with all the praise being thrown in Fauci's direction, these are some monumental mistakes. One might even say career ending if we lived in an honest world. Now, even with this clear illusion of severity, they still needed to bolster the numbers, which brings me to my first point, which is what I refer to as PIC. Many may not even know what that is. It stands for pneumonia, influenza, and COVID-19. You can look this right on there. You can look at the CDC website right now, and it's prominently posted as PIC. Now, what this is a combination of pneumonia, influenza, and COVID numbers being put together and shown to you as COVID risk. That's inaccurate. Now, yes, there is such a thing as secondary infections, which is how they point to that. But the point about secondary infections is an association, not the entire problem. And as I go through, you'll see more that we're finding that it's predominantly something other than what they're telling you is the problem, and yet saying that is the ultimate point. Now, an illusion that we're talking about today in regard to combining these things has been used long before COVID-19 to push flu vaccine sales. As even the WHO called out itself in 2011, and even the British Medical Journal and the Health and Human Services called out in 2018, according to the HHS, 62,034 people died from the flu in the year 2001, 61,777 of which were attributed to pneumonia, 257 to the flu alone. That's a fact. Yet this total was used nonetheless to push injections for the flu. And a similar situation is the 1918 Spanish flu, which, if you guys understand the history and you look it up on Wikipedia, not that that makes it actually accurate, but that it's there, that predominantly, even according to Dr. Fauci's own research on the topic, in 1918, the predominant vast majority, were their words, were from pneumonia. Now, there's a lot to be discussed around that one point, but the bottom line is, if this is what we're talking about, isn't this a pneumonia pandemic with a side of COVID? Or some other variation thereof? The bottom line is that's not the full picture, and most people do not know that fact. Now, the same thing is happening today. And this is made comically clear when the flu just up and vanishes. No longer happens this year, right? Because the flu, yeah, and the funny part about that topic is, guess what they tell you? Oh, it's because everyone's wearing their mask and they're all social distancing. But if you ask, well, why is COVID coming up again? Well, it's because nobody's wearing their mask and everybody's not social distancing. And those things happen simultaneously. And it's ridiculous. Now, anything resembling flu-like symptoms today is likely deemed COVID. And this is even expressed by many people in authority because they're doing it to keep you safe. But the problem is, if you're using numbers that you're admitting are inaccurate, you can't use those numbers to force people into positions they don't want to be in. You can't use false information to remove people's freedom. Now, anything resembling those symptoms is being deemed COVID by using the next part of the illusion, which is the PCR test. I'd like to start with something you may not have heard about before. Maybe you have if you watch my show. It's called The Epidemic That Wasn't, from 2007. The New York Times actually wrote about this back when they were, I guess, remotely even trying to be honest. Who knows, maybe they had an agenda to do the truth that time. But the point is, they wrote about it in 2007. And this is discussing a topic of a whooping cough epidemic. Now, at the time, they were convinced there was an epidemic. They shut the hospital down, people were given vaccines, they did everything you're seeing today, quarantines. And then, after months of that, They came back and said, oh, it turns out there was not a single case of whooping cough. You know why that happened? The doctors themselves spoke up and said, well, we were testing based on symptoms, and we used a test to make sure we could confirm that those symptoms were what we thought it was. And they said, it turns out that our over-reliance on the PCR test was why we were led astray. That was in 2007. That's openly discussed. They knew this today. Now, whether or not that's chosen for the illusion we're talking about today, or it was a mistake among many claimed mistakes, is up for you to decide. But the point is, this was discussed, and those doctors themselves said, we need to think about this going forward because this will happen again. And they were right. Now, Dr. Scoglio, PhD, is one of many, many highly credentialed doctors that have spoken up and said, this is not the right tool. Now, he tested a kiwi fruit live on the air, and it tested positive. There's been a lot of cases of that, I'm sure you've all seen. It's not a joke. Now, sure, you can have false positives, false negatives, and all sorts of things on tests, but the point is, he made very clear that when you're using a cycle threshold on this test of 40 or 45, or four, above 40, it's upwards of 95% false positives. Now, you might not be shocked to find out, you might not be shocked to find out that the majority of this country currently, verifiably, uses above 40 cycle threshold for their tests. Now, if you don't know what that means, it's a simple, to make it simple, it's a way of increasing your magnification to look closer at what you're looking at. However, when you closer you get, the more convoluted it becomes, to make it very simple. And these doctors are telling you that they go over 40, it makes it impossible. Now, what's interesting is Fauci himself was on the record in 2020 on a podcast on it, Today in Virology, I believe it's called, very prominent. He himself stated exactly that if you use a cycle threshold over 35, the test is not replication competent, meaning it doesn't work. And here we are. So Fauci can say that in 2020 live on the air. I can prove to you we're using over 40 right now. How is that not an illusion? Creating false positives. Now, we've seen a lot of these in general from before. We've seen them talk about 28 days in a positive test, right? That's happening in the UK right now. If you get a positive test with that possible false positive, and then you get in a car accident 27 days later, you're a COVID-19 death. That's admitted to. Of course, it's for your safety, right? But again, if it's going to be an overshot number that's inaccurate, you can't use it to remove people's freedoms. Now, before that even, symptoms and just circumstances were being used. Remember this. They said, well, they've got the sniffles and they're coughing and then they're in a bad high area zone. Well, we're going to call that COVID-19. And they've admitted to all of this. Now, the bottom line on the cycle threshold is that the breakthrough cases today, they're calling after the injection. Guess what cycle threshold they're using? Can you guess? Under 28. How do you not recognize the intentional deception that they're using something that guarantees it will look less on one side, or you could argue more accurate, and on the other side, a guarantee to make sure you have a higher number? It's quite simple, guys. These are deceptions. Now, the intention, again, you can debate, but these are deceptions. I guess I should stop for a second to let you guys clap if I had to. Now, Kary Mullis is somebody you're probably familiar with, the person who invented this test. Now, I want to read you a direct quote that he stated before he died. PCR is intended to identify substances qualitatively, but by its very nature is unsuited for estimating numbers. Although there is a common misimpression that the viral load tests actually count the number of viruses in the blood, these tests cannot detect free infectious viruses at all. They can only detect proteins that are believed, in some cases wrongly, to be unique to HIV. The test can detect genetic sequences of viruses, but not viruses themselves. Now, yes, this was being discussed in the context of HIV. That's the commonly used way to dismiss this. But what he's generally saying is the last part of this. The test can detect genetic sequences of viruses, but cannot detect viruses themselves. And yet we're using this for that exact purpose. There's your illusion. Now, this brings me to the emergency use authorization. One of these many pillars of the ways we're being deceived. Now, these are emergency authorizations, both for individual uses, like the tests I just described, which are indeed emergency authorized for your use, even though not an emergency, which I'm getting to. Masks, injections, all emergency authorized, as well as for the country in general. Now, those are two different things, but equally important on how they're being used to pretend you're in a dangerous situation that necessitates things that we're not fully sure about, but just in case. And that doesn't make sense. Now, all of these are based on the verifiable lies that we just discussed. We are not in an emergency, at this moment, even based on the U.S. government's own pandemic chart from before COVID started. And that's easily looked up. Even more interesting, the United Kingdom, as of March 19th, 2020, on their own website states, quote, COVID-19 is no longer considered to be a high-consequence infectious disease, end quote. It still says that right now. I don't even understand how that makes sense. Now, without the emergency use authorization, their pandemic powers and illusion of legitimacy, which is really what this gives them, are dramatically restricted. If that emergency is removed, they don't have this quasi-authority they're using right now. They might still do it, but it gives us our power over them, which is really what was supposed to be happening today. The government works for you. That's how this is supposed to work. Now, this is why it continues right now, the emergency use, based on the lingering after effects. And that's not a joke. Right now, on the original emergency statement, it said based on the threat of COVID-19. If you look at the ones since then, every 90 days, they have to renew it. It now says based on the after effects, what it has done, which is a guaranteed way to make sure this never ends. There will always be something they point to say we're still in this emergency because, same with the Patriot Act and plenty of other things they've used ongoing that have never gone away, that have been used to remove your freedoms under a guise of keeping you safe. Now, as it became more widely known that Neil Ferguson was yet again incorrect, which I think is really important to understand, that I think at least five catastrophically important times, he has been very, very seriously wrong that leaned on the side of what the government wanted. That's not hard to see, and yet again with COVID-19. But when the time came where people were like, obviously that's incorrect and he made mistakes, they then pivoted to the illusory threat of asymptomatic spread. This is because we're going, well, yes, it's not as dangerous as we said, but we don't know. It could be out there. That person could be sick. We don't know, right? This is how they got people worked up. Now, Fauci himself has stated that respiratory viruses spread by symptoms before this all started, right? And this is what we're, this has been the common understanding. Now, there's been a 10 million person strong study that showed that out of 10 million people they tested, only 300 of them were shown to be asymptomatic. Guess how many of those 300 were transmissible? Zero. You know why? Because they didn't have symptoms. And they were spreading it. And now this has been used as well to turn the focus back on children. Children that have a 0% risk, statistically speaking, in every possible factor you can look at. And I'll talk on that more in a second. They're using the asymptomatic concept to say, well, we don't know, those kids could spread it to you. Science is what we're talking about today, right? They keep telling us, trust the science. And then they use something like this, which is 100% based on fear. We don't know, that kid could be sick. That's not science, it's fear-mongering. Now, this led us predictably to the promotion of lockdowns. Obviously, we don't know. We have to lock down because there's danger everywhere, right? This keeps people in fear. This is another way that maintains the illusion. Because if you think you're in fear, if you think there's a problem, well, you're going to continue acting like there's a problem. Now, this increases people's illness. Now, this has been shown in every study I can find about what lockdowns are doing now and what they've done before. That's an also important point. There, before this all started, there's plenty of scientific research that said lockdowns were not the way to go. In fact, the word that was used was archaic. But we ignored that because government said. But it increases your illness, mental illness, physical illness, emotional illness. In fact, it lowers your immune system for many reasons I could point out. All of this leads to more illness, which then is otherwise, in some cases, labeled COVID-19. It isolates you from your friends, your family. And I find this to be an incredibly important point. It stops you from, in many cases, being able to converse about what's going on with your family. Talking at the dinner table, what's going on? Did you agree with that? I heard something different. When you're separated from people around you, you don't do that. And that is something that I think has led us in a very dangerous path, more along with a lot of other things. Now, interestingly enough, the WHO has come out after all this and said, well, lockdowns are not the primary method we should be using. Now, what's interesting is before, your government said, well, you can't challenge the WHO guidelines. You can't do that. And then suddenly the WHO said, well, we shouldn't be using lockdowns. They said, well, we disagree. We're going to keep doing it. And they did, all of them. UK, United States, they all do it. Now, what's interesting is it shows you the illusion that they're using to shut people like me down. Oh, you can't challenge what WHO says. We're going to censor your information, but we'll do it if we see fit. These are all examples of how they are deceiving you and creating an illusion. Now, of course, no discussion of the COVID-19 illusion is complete without the topic of masks. And we all know this. The part of the illusion that masks are filling just cannot be overstated. Next to the PCR test, I truly feel that the mask is the largest part of this deception. On one hand, it obviously maintains the illusion of severity. This has been discussed many times. You walk around and half the people are in masks. Well, even if you don't agree with it, you think, well, there's probably something going on. It keeps you feeling in this constant state of threat. But it also actually creates the severity itself. Now, this is a hard thing for some people to understand. The scientific research from before this, as Starbuck pointed out as well, the studies they've done have shown you this one important statement, not statistically significant. It does not have a statistically significant effect on stopping transmission. There was a random controlled trial done on cloth masks, the only one that I've seen done. Now that has shown you very clearly, beyond a shadow of a doubt, it increases the risk of infection. It leads to things like bacterial pneumonia. Now, interesting thing about that is bacterial pneumonia creates the symptoms that look just like COVID-19. Bacterial pneumonia can be spread to somebody else. Okay, so you can see this little perfect circle of illusion just between the mask, the PCR test, and what they're telling you is happening. You're wearing a mask that's creating something that's being called COVID-19. It can spread to somebody else. They catch it, spread to somebody else. All this is being labeled something it's not. That is possible. I say possible because it's not everywhere. I believe it's happening almost everywhere. That's my opinion. At this point, it's important to point out a very important grouping of work that's been done by the Swiss Policy Research. One of its huge studies found that the average age of death from these alleged COVID-19 cases showed that COVID mortality was right in line with natural mortality. And this is very interesting, right? And people may ask, how is that possible? How is that possible? Well, they're combining and averaging everyone's risk. That's what we have to understand, even though the vast majority are not at risk. Now, whether or not you agree with that is irrelevant because they're telling you that if you just listen. If you look at the CDC's information, they pointed this out, I forget exactly how long ago, months ago, maybe longer. Only 6% died from COVID alone. Of all the deaths we've seen, only 6% died from COVID alone. That's from the CDC's own website. That means that 94% of people that died, they're telling you is COVID-19, died, as they tell you, with a minimum, or average, excuse me, of 2.6 other comorbidities. They were sick. And in many cases, we're talking about people that were already in the hospital. They were in the hospital with illnesses, maybe a broken leg. And they go, oh, well, since you're here, we need to test to make sure you're not sick with the test that has a high false positive rate. And they go, well, now you've got COVID-19. Now, even if they're let out of the hospital, that still goes down as a COVID hospitalization. And if they die in that hospital, that goes down as a COVID death. They're open and honest about all this stuff. I shouldn't say honest, but they're admitting all of this stuff in very dishonest ways. Now, a meta-analysis that I talk about frequently on my show, almost done, is of 113 infection fatality rate studies. This is a meta-analysis of all of them, and it tells you that if you're under 10, you have a risk of 0.002%. Now, that's including all of these. That's averaging this stuff out. Now, if you look at the Oxford calculator that they tell you you should be listening to, and you do the math, you do the information for a 19-year-old person or younger, it says literally 1 in a million. That's not a joke. 1 in a million. We use that as a joke. Ah, it's 1 in a million. That means to us it's not possible, right? They're telling you people 19 or younger have a 1 in a million chance of getting this, and yet they're forcing something in their arm, in many cases, that increases that risk verifiably so. Whether we're talking about myocarditis, which they just admitted was an increased risk. Not just some, but everyone. Now, I'm going to try to rush through this since I'm running out of time here, guys. So I want to make it clear, first of all, that the safety trials on this concept, that the injection we're talking about here, 6 months at the most. That's admitted. That's from Bloomberg. That's from mainstream media. The median, the average of safety trials before this was 23 months. And we're supposed to pretend that this was done appropriately. They try to argue that it's been studied for 20 years. But that doesn't mean anything in regard to how long the safety trials last once they begin. It's a deception like so many other things. We have VAERS. Over 6,000 deaths reported. Over 600,000 adverse events. And yes, these are unverified. All that really means is they failed to verify them. Not that they don't exist. And the fact is, as HHS and Harvard have told you in their previous study, that's at average under 1% of the total. Now, in 1976, they halted a swine flu program for 3 reported deaths on the same type of system, unverified. 3. In a later program, they had 53 reported deaths, and they again halted the program. 6,000, over 600,000 adverse events, and they're pretending like it doesn't matter. Now, since the mass coercion of Americans to get an experimental injection, what have we seen? A very telling correlation between administration of the injection and a sharp rise in COVID-19, we're told. An explosion of so-called breakthrough cases. An almost rapid fire disclosure of new variants. all being manipulated and hidden by the CDC. Bloomberg also wrote that they found 111,000 breakthrough cases the CDC didn't divulge. And they still claim the number's less than that. They also pulled from 6 months of data to claim the pandemic of the unvaccinated from a period of time when the most of the people were unvaccinated. That was a willful deception to pull from a time when, of course, whatever you're looking for is going to be predominantly what most of the people are. And they had plenty more months after that to find out the fact that it's the opposite. Now, finally, this brings me to my last point. I know I need to rush, but this brings me to natural immunity. The biggest elephant in the room of this entire topic. CDC has admitted, listed off, lasting, durable, robust T-cell memory B antibodies, not just for this one thing, but for 23 variants, including the variants of concern, at a time when they're telling you that most of these current variants are resistant to the vaccines, or vaccines that it doesn't work. How does this even possibly make sense? Now, on top of that, the body of scientific evidence also shows that giving the injection to those previously infected increases their risk. All of this considered, the people most at risk currently are by and large the people who are injected. And this is based on the scientific research. And they want to force this in your kids' arms. They're using all of these illusions, all these deceptions and lies. Your freedoms are being stripped away one by one. We all see it. My hope today is that by arming each of you with these tools to break this down, that we can go out and reach one more person today. That's all that matters. One more person. Every single day, if we reach one more person, we're going in the right direction. As I say in my show often, just be a little bit better than yesterday. It's all we can do. Thank you for your time, guys.